Gamer's Guide to the Galaxy. Interstellar Gaming Podcast.
I'm Brian Wade, and I'll be your captain today.
And I'm Stuart, back again as the gunner. Pew, pew, pew! Need beef these things up. And I'm the guy that was put in charge of changing the locks after we had an unexpected visitor last episode. Find out how well that went next.
I'm Vader, and I'm a weapons specialist. I make our swords because we need them in space.
Swords are very important in space.
And you're going to beef up my guns so they won't go pew, pew, pew anymore. I want
that big sorry, hang on, guys. Is that... Is that the hitchhiker alarm going off again?
I think it is.
Stuart, sure, weren't you in charge of this?
God damn, I was meant to change those walls.
Bring him up to the board.
Hello? This is...
Hey, Chris. How's
this
it going?
This is Chris. My ATB meter has started feeling, and I'm very nervous.
This boy doesn't mess about. There was no silence or anything. Just right in there. He's a speedster.
Chris is a professional podcaster. Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, yeah. Thanks for having me.
I guess I didn't say that this is episode 3 of Gamer's Guide to the Galaxy, and you're on it, and also on our spaceship. Chris, tell the fine folks at home about you, the person.
Okay, well, my name is Chris. I was told that this would be the high wind, and that it wouldn't smell, and both of those things were wrong. I am...
That's a musk. It's a meaty musk.
I'm a person of the internet. I do a podcast with a man named about the television show Supernatural.
Nobody knows who that is.
No, come on. Y'all know who he is. He's not a stowaway on here, though. But yeah, we do Monster of the Week. We do a podcast called Thinking Face. And I love Final Fantasy.
That's very convenient because we're planning on talking about Final Fantasy today, actually.
A lot.
Who knew?
It's weird that you conveniently got hitchhiked onto the ship. The week we're planning to talk about Final Fantasy.
What are the odds?
It's as if the ghost of Kojima knew.
The ghost of Kojima took me here.
I've been meaning to talk to you guys about that. Can we change the name of the ship?
Nope.
I kind of want to name it Buster Sword.
Nope.
Because I'm really into Final Fantasy now.
You know where the bucket and paint is. You want to do it, go out and do it yourself. I did it last month, and now I've got t-shirts, cozies, can koozies, everything made up with Ghost of Kojima.
We're going to make new ones.
I'm not changing.
There's so much merch you have to replace. Also, my ATB meter is still filling.
Oh, God.
Why am I in combat?
Chris, put your sword away.
I have to.
Get on the deck chair.
Just use those abilities.
Yeah, just sit in the hitchhiker chair that we have.
Okay. All right, I'm taking a seat. It still smells, but I'm taking a seat.
Well, right. He died in that chair. It was damp, and I had to get the chunks off it. God damn it. That's where the beefy musk comes from.
Of course. Now I recognize the scent.
Of course.
In which
that's,
way
that's
we've
we
trapped... We've trapped ourselves into a perspective there of no returning guests. Everyone dies horrifically.
It's true.
Oh, no.
It's not the red shirts that die on our ship.
I'm sorry to tell you, Chris, but that's why your ATV meter has been filling.
Oh, no.
That engine's got to burn something. We're fresh out of puppies.
Oh no.
This is going
well. Yeah, Chris, very excited to have you on the show.
Thanks.
You and I have been talking about you being on a podcast with us for a long time.
Yeah.
And it only took a global pandemic to make it actually happen.
That's right. It took us 6 years, but we landed here finally.
Yeah. So let's talk about what we've been doing, and by what we've been doing, I mean Charles, tell us what you've been doing.
What's crafting our what's been crafted?
I did tell you about the letterbox last time, didn't I?
The what?
No.
The letterbox.
No, there was talk.
No. You told us about the Dragon Ball box.
Yes, I made the Dragon Ball lamp and the chair. I think it was after we recorded last time. I went out. We made a bottle rocket.
The misfiring rocket.
But then we decorated our letterbox as a fairy house.
Okay.
Handy. Right. Handy.
And entered into a competition with a hardware store here in NZ. And we won a prize.
Oh, very nice.
Wow.
because
did you post photos of your
bag of screws?
Letterbox?
Yes, it's on the Twitter somewhere, I believe.
All right, I will find it.
Yeah, it was cool. It was a fun activity with the kids. But then also, I've liked the subject we're about to talk about for a few hours very much. I liked it so much, I stopped playing because I wanted my own Buster Sword. And so it was when I got to, what is it, chapter six or seven? Now I can't think about it. I can scroll down and check our show notes. Sector 5 slums, when the orphan kids have all the little Buster Swords on their back.
Okay.
And I was jealous, so I...
Damn you, children. Damn you, homeless families.
You wanted your own orphan boy Buster Sword.
Yeah. And so it started off, the plan was just to make a simple kind of silhouette, like a wooden silhouette of it. But the guys, I have a problem. I like to make things fancy and I like to tinker. So now it's evolved further and I've carved in the details. I don't know what to call it. You know, like the details at the base of the sword. It kind of looks like a circuit board almost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
I've carved that into it on both sides so it's mirrored. It took a very long time. And in fact, it took the length of 1.5 Lord of the Rings movies to
wow.
So yeah, four to five
standard
hours.
Standard edition or standard?
Standard, but we did end up watching the extended third movie. Anyway, that's the next thing I've done. But yeah, so, and then I've decided to do materia, and I've recently been getting into making, using resin to make jewelry. I don't know if I've mentioned, I do lots of weird crap, guys. I'm about to start making soap later today, so.
Okay.
Real fat or pretend fat?
Oil.
Human fat.
We were trying to get him to come out with that without pushing him too hard.
Fight club style. I would, but I can't get down to the local liposuction because of lockdown. I'm just going to use coconut oil and olive oil. But anyway, way off tangent. I get just carried away. I've been playing with resins, and so I decided I was going to make my own materia to put in my Buster Sword, because... That's the cherry on top of the cake, is the materia. And so I've done one test, and it worked pretty well. And I'm waiting on more colours, resin colours, to turn up, so I can then make multiple. And I'm designing it so I can take, you know, like the little raised section where the materia sits on the base of the sword? Stuart's just nodding along, even though he doesn't know.
No, there's the bit that has stones that go, the Infinity Stone bit, and then there's the bit that doesn't have Infinity Stone bit. It's like Tifa's gloves have Infinity Stone bits, and then they don't have Infinity Stone bits. See?
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sure do so once that. One side is magnetized, so I can pop it off and change the materia as I want.
Nice.
God, this sounds so
that,
cool.
You got to have that cure materia in there, though.
Yeah.
No, this is all grand.
No, nah, man, it's blue and green, so I can have my fire sword.
No, always got to have the cure material in there, man.
I saw Kira, but every episode you leave is on a cliffhanger. Chicken coop, what happened?
Oh, it hasn't turned up yet.
damn it.
But yeah, so my Buster Sword's getting very elaborate. It's still wood. I'm now planning on doing a paint job once I get materia sorted. But I'm sharing. My brother also likes Final Fantasy, and I've been sharing pictures with him. And he's like, "It would be cool if the materia is glowing, because materia does glow naturally." And so now I've ordered parts to try and implement
a
LED system.
Oh my god!
Incredible stuff.
So it's all made out of wood, so it is carryable. I think. I've been sent, since I've done that, Brian, you sent me the Odin Makes, a YouTube guy who yes. made a foam one, yep. which is pretty cool. And then my brother-in-law sent me a YouTube video of someone who made like an exact replica to like out of metal, so it weighs like 50 pounds or 60 pounds or something. No, maybe more. Maybe it was like closer to 90 pounds. And yeah. And it was very hard to lift. Like, one of the world's strongest men was having trouble swinging it in the video. So
needs that Mako enhancement, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, man. Gives you the increased strength and also glowy eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So my sword I can carry and I can swing it, and it's very fun to swing because it has still has heft, even though it's just plywood.
Unlike that foam one, when you hit someone with it, it will hurt.
Hit the sword.
Also true.
It'll probably hurt the person if I swung a bit of plywood at them. They'd hurt.
This, oh yeah, that would definitely hurt. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've even sharpened the edge, like the blade, so there is a blade. I haven't gone like really thin, so
this is
leading
up to a watermelon ending its life in a horrific way. There's going to be a selection of fruits and cans that are never going to see the light of day again, aren't they?
No, I don't want to risk hurting my Buster Sword.
Like fruit ex-soldier?
Yeah.
It's the ultimate crossover between Fruit Ninja and plywood.
This is the crossover we've been waiting for.
Beats cup noodles any day.
There was actually a little tragedy with my sword. I had Odin to go get it so I could do that video that I shared. And I hear this crack, and he was fighting with his sister, and she poked him, and he was holding it on his back like Cloud does, and he dropped it and chipped the corner off, so I had to glue it back on. I was not a happy camper.
Dang.
For a minute, I thought you were going to say swung it at her. That was escalating.
I was more concerned that you were going to tell me that he like smacked her upside the head with that.
No, he's not. He wouldn't do that. But like, she's more aggressive, the little sister, and so she was winding him up and hit. Freaked him out and he dropped.
So that's why you sent him to get the sword and not her.
Yep.
Yeah, because she would have smacked him upside the head.
Probably. I don't think she could swing it.
Took down half your sideboard as well at the same time, and your TV and your ceiling fan. Just swinging it in the living room.
Because it is, I don't know if it's quite as long, but it's very close to being accurate to size. Like it's, I think it's my height.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, sorry, I'm pretty sure the sword is like about 6 feet tall, so with the handle and all.
Cloud is 5'7" tall. I don't know how
is he really that short?
Yeah, he's a small boy.
Oh, that's my height.
I only know this because I saw a post about it on Twitter like 3 days ago.
That's my height.
Okay, there you go. So if it's the same height as you, then it is the accurate size.
Oh my god, he really is. I really felt like he was taller than that.
Well, Brian, because you're a giant, so you're just used to, you just assume everyone's up on your level.
It's the long legs. It's very deceiving.
I need to see Cloud and Zach next to each other in that game again now, because I'm looking at this website, this article on thegamer.com. Every main character's age, height, and birthday. And Zach is apparently roughly 6'2".
Yep. So, Sephiroth Cloud's a little bit smaller. One. Yeah, even with the those player Kai figures.
I'm the same height as Sephiroth.
The figures look like they're to a different scale when you put Cloud next to Sephiroth, because Sephiroth is 6-something and Cloud's 5'7". So there's a big height difference even in the action figures.
Yeah.
That makes Tifa like 4'5" or something, because she's
Tifa's 5'4" according to this article.
I know, she's
Barret is 6'5".
Hey, Barret's huge.
Marlene is height unknown, just so you know.
Okay, perfect.
This is incredible. Like, what?
Now, I want to know how tall Red 13 is.
Why don't you just do a podcast about the height of the characters?
Yeah, let's do that.
You want Red 13 is 3'9".
Excellent. I was hoping you would bring that up.
Yep.
So how do they all compare to the Ark at Halo? Because it's a spaceship that was like twice the size of Earth.
They all fit on it. We'll put it that way.
They all fit on the spaceship. How that works.
Yeah. Barret is huge. But yeah, so my sword, it's a big sword, and I'm having fun.
It looks awesome from what I've seen so far.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Yeah, you'll have to provide updated photos.
Will it be done before lockdown's finished? Because I hear New Zealand's a clean country now, so I hear.
No, but that's...
That's politics. What I'm telling the world. Really, it's a war-torn civilization.
It's quite funny, because that was on the news yesterday about how the world's reporting that New Zealand's eliminated it. And it's not true. Our head doctor guy has come out and said, no, elimination's a process, and we just need to keep working on it. It's all political, you know. Politicians be politicians.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're using positive words to make themselves sound better, and the opposition using negative words to make the opposition sound worse.
We'll hold that till later, and that update is my favourite section.
Well, I thought you were segueing. But no, we haven't eliminated it.
We'll just cut half everybody else there. Just bust or sword them out the way. Right, yep. So, injecting disinfectant, boys. Who said I go?
Let's do it.
I'm out my box on Dettol. It's amazing.
So, what else has everyone else been doing? Anything? Any fun activities you've been up to, Chris?
Other than playing video games, no. Just working from home, being isolated and completely alone. I have played...
Hey, listen, you got Sully the Cat over there.
I do have Sully the Cat. He's bored at this point. He doesn't want to hang out anymore.
He's probably more just like, why the fuck are you here all the time?
Yeah. He's like, I used to like it when you'd leave for a while and I could, you know, mess around the house. But now I'm just always here. He gets fed more, so he should be happy. But I played Final Fantasy VII Remake, and then I played Final Fantasy IX, and then I just last night finished Final Fantasy X. So I've been doing nothing else.
I was actually going to ask you about that, because I had you were really frustrated with the...
Yeah, I don't know if anyone's played Final Fantasy X. To get the main character's ultimate weapon, you have to complete a few tasks. You have to do it for all the ultimate weapons. But I was just trying to get the one sword. So you have to do a chocobo race, where you have to finish the race with a time of 0.0 seconds by either... collecting balloons, which lowers your time, or not getting hit by birds, which makes your time go up, blah blah blah. I spent about 5 hours doing it, which was insane, and I felt disgusting the whole time. I in the past have done it in 10 minutes, you know, in previous lifetimes, but this time it took me all day and I felt miserable, but I kept doing it anyway because it's like, what, I can't even leave my house, what else am I gonna do? So I just kept going, made myself feel terrible, not even like getting mad, just like getting worse, turning into a slug. I finally did it, and then I went to, so that was one piece of the puzzle. To go and pick up the other piece of the puzzle, all I had to do, according to my strategy guide that I got in 2001, was go to this other area and pick it up out of a treasure chest. I went to that area, and unfortunately, the PS4 version is now the updated international version of Final Fantasy X. My strategy guide is outdated and did not tell me, but that there is a mega super Dark Bahamut mega boss there. I was unable to beat it. I was unable to get that second item, so all of my chocobo racing was for naught. But last night I managed to just say, screw it, forget the weapons, I'm not collecting all the good stuff, I'm just going to beat the game and be done with it. Yeah. So that's what I've been doing.
Got to whip you Evan's ass.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, it was way too convoluted, the ultimate weapons in 10. What was the one? Yeah. Wasn't there one that you have to dodge lightning like 1,000 times?
Yep, Lulu's, uh-huh. You have to dodge 200 lightning bolts in a row.
I've never even dodged one lightning bolt.
My brother did that.
I did it when I was a teen. That mm-hmm. was the last time.
No, I could never be bothered doing that.
It's insane. Listen, I had a lot of time then.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, I mean, same thing with that chocobo race. I completed it when I was a kid. And as soon as I did it, maybe a day or two later, I accidentally deleted the save off of my memory card. Jesus. I don't know how I did it. But because I was a kid, I was just like, all right, guess I'll just play the whole game again and get to that point and do the whole race again. And I did it in like 2 weeks because I was a kid and nothing mattered. If that happened now, my PS4 would be out the window.
Yeah. No fun.
But hey, you know, Final Fantasy's cool. I just installed 12 on my PS4, so I'm just continuing the trend.
Just ready to keep on rolling.
That's right.
I do have something to talk about, Chris, if you're done on your Final Fantasy update.
Oh, yeah. Let's hear it.
I, last night, spent about 3 hours trying to get Final Fantasy XIV to install on my PC.
Oh, my God.
I had an error. It threw up an error code, and I was like, okay, like, you know, this is something you deal with as a PC gamer, like me. Mm-hmm. You occasionally have to deal with an error code, so, you know, you get on Google, and you figure out the error code, and usually you can figure it out. I was like 3 or 4 Google pages deep, looking for answers. I had tried literally every single answer that Google had given me. I had had a friend who plays the game also helping me try to figure this out. I literally tried everything short of installing a VPN and trying to route the update through that. This is an issue that has been happening with Final Fantasy XIV's updater since about 2016.
Oh, wow.
Still hasn't been fixed, and I eventually got mad and gave up. So that's my Final Fantasy update.
That stinks.
So instead I said, fuck this, and found my cart for Bravely Default, and I put that in my 3DS, and I started playing that today.
Oh, wow. Nice. Have you played Final Fantasy 14 before?
I played a few hours of it.
Okay.
I just like there are a bunch of people on like my Destiny clan Discord who also play Final Fantasy 14.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, well, I guess I'll try it out. Like Destiny's kind of in a lull right now. Like there's not a whole lot super exciting happening. So they're all playing Final Fantasy 14. I was like, well, I guess I could play Final Fantasy 14 with them. Nope. Not going to happen.
Fate conspired against you.
That's right.
The whispers.
What about you, Stuart?
Just living life. working as standard. Kind of fell into a fighting arcade thing hole for the last 3-4 weeks. Besides Final Fantasy and other JRPGs, Persona 5 Royal as well, which is again, yeah, JRPGs all at one time is confusing. The lines become blurred. But I got my hands on an arcade fighting stick, so been enjoying kind of just messing about with a couple of fighting games on the PlayStation, kind of Street Fighter stuff, and then Under Night into the XRZD massive name in the world, and stuff like that. So yeah, just kind of rekindling that love for getting my ass handed to me by total strangers online, because you think you're good, you're not good. You're not even worth good.
It's true.
And playing COD. Woo! Yeah, more COD. All the COD. Yum, yum, yum. Like COD. So, yeah. Games, basically.
Video games.
Oops. You guys need to pull out the power tools and do some DIY, man.
I know. We got to get on your game, man. You're on a whole nother level.
It's mad.
Cut my grass. Yeah, that's enough.
When I was a kid, my grandfather got a new table saw, and my mom said, "Hey, why don't you go run over to their house and see if he'll make you something?" So I went over to my grandfather. I said, "Hey, can you make me a sword on your new table saw?" He said, "Yeah, sure thing. I want to test this thing out. What do you want it to look like?" I was like, "Okay." And then I gave him a picture of Squall's gunblade. I needed to have a trigger space and whatever. And to his credit, he gave me a look like, "What is happening? Who are you? What's wrong with this boy?" But he did it. He made it for me, and it was great.
What a grandpa.
Yeah, I had to make me several of them because I kept breaking them. But
that's a hell of a grandpa, though.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's gonna be me.
I need to channel that. Yeah, that's gonna be you. Yep.
That's awesome. So,
do we wanna talk about what we've been doing vis-a-vis lockdown?
Yeah, of course
we
do.
We've hit all of it.
So, it's still happening, people. Yeah.
I was reading some depressing headlines about the things going on in the U.S. with COVID-19, including that we have hit more than 1 million confirmed cases as of today. And additionally, Iowa apparently never locked down in any way, really, and are now the fastest growing number of cases in the country.
Goodness.
Don't worry, Trump's trying to develop a way to put the light inside you. The light! Sounds a bit like kind of crazy religious man / nuclear bomb testing theory and thing. But that was before he poisoned you all by injecting Dettol into your vein.
Which
I think was phenomenal, because 5 minutes after that, the people who owned Dettol went on social media and that and said, "In no way, shape, or form should you internally take any of our products. Thank you." And I'm like, God damn. Just when you think you're in a bad place, someday, like, America comes along and saves you all.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Like, no matter how bad life gets, at least we're no America. Sorry. I know I'm outnumbered, but yeah.
Just laughing through our tears.
Yep. This headline specifically about Iowa. Iowa has the 15th lowest population density of any of the states, and has the fastest rate of COVID-19 spread in the country.
That's insane. So,
pretty cool country we live in.
But they're all marching in the streets to reopen the one that opened, you know. It's a beautiful thing. It's beautiful seeing people rallying for something that's going to kill millions.
Yeah, yep. Right.
Insane.
So, I want to get a haircut. Like, I get it. I want to get a haircut, too. My hair is way too fucking long right now. Mm-hmm.
I'm in full ponytail mode, man. I haven't been able to do anything about this. It's a lot. I haven't seen my girlfriend in a month, but, you know, I don't want to die, and I don't want other people to die.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so on the flip side, what to explain more what Stuart was alluding to, we moved from our government made a lockdown alert system, and we basically went straight to alert level. There's four levels. We instantly, as soon as it was brought out, we went straight to two, and then like a week later, we went to three for 2 days, and then four, level four. And we've been level four for 5 weeks. And level four means everyone stay home. Only essential workers working. And, like, supermarkets are open. Like, nothing else. And then yesterday we moved. My wife's birthday, we moved to level three.
Wow.
And so, which means everyone stay at home, but more people can go back to work. So, like, construction can start getting back as long as they have, like, distancing protocols and established, so workers can't be close together, and that, so we've got down to, I think like yesterday we had three new confirmed cases in the day, and we've had a few deaths, but they've unfortunate, which is unfortunate no matter what, but I think we've had 18 deaths in New Zealand. So we're nowhere near as bad as the rest of the world.
That did all?
Yeah.
Wow. Hmm. Wow. We're like kicking on the door of 10,000 folk went the Crow Road.
Our population is a lot less. We're only like pushing on close to 5 million people. But you compare it to...
Still
like,
18s. That's impressive shit, man.
You compare it to Ireland... And unfortunately, they didn't lock down, from what I understand. And they have the same population as us. And they have, I think they're in the thousands of deaths now, or close to.
I know it's doing the rounds in the old folks' homes now, which is the new thing, which is, well, it's insta death, isn't it? It's you're not coming back. I'm sorry. That's the fear it was originally. Was that going to happen? And now we're staring down the barrel with that happening. And we're also at the point where the people who are caring for the people who have it, doctors, nurses, medics, blah, 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 they're now getting it and dying because of it. So it's becoming a very vicious cycle, if you know what I mean. But well, they started to talk about like life after it a bit now for us. I don't know if any of your guys started talking about like life after.
They're like fucking raring to go. Like, everybody, like all of the public officials in America are just like we got to reopen this economy, we got to get everybody back to work, back to normal. Like, it's not going to be fucking normal. Like,
no.
Well, the big thing I've took away from it is that they've said, like, sports events, they've basically said that it's unlikely there'll be any crowds at any sporting event until there's a vaccine found in the UK. Well, that could be a time, which then also has a knock-on effect at not just sporting events, but like expos and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? The ramifications of dropping that in the pond ripple greatly, you know. To even the point where you argue, well, in a pub you might have 30 people in close proximity. Is that classified as a, you know, we're at the point just now where it's like it's advised to maybe wear a mask when you go. So that's what pisses me off. They push their foot around instead of just going, look, wear your division mask and go outside. They're like, no, you might want to wear a mask if you're outside. But the only reason they're pussyfooting around it is they can't tell you to wear a mask, because where did Joe Bloggs buy masks for when A, there ain't anywhere to buy them, and Amazon's taking the piss. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you're not getting the mask for Amazon to the end of next month.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, that's, and obviously the government's not going to supply everybody with a mask, you know? It's a vicious cycle. It's a vicious cycle.
Yeah.
It is.
The last day that I had gone into work, like actually into the office, I was the only person who wore a mask in. And the people around here treat it like it is the strangest thing in the world. But it's so easy to do. It just helps everybody just a little bit. You can tie a t-shirt around your face if you really have to.
Right, man. Like, fucking cut the sleeve off of a t-shirt and wear that around your face.
You'll look like a bandit. You'll be cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I do also get weird looks from people at the grocery store when I'm wearing a when I'm there wearing a mask, which is absurd.
It's like, nothing new for you, I understand, but it's still not right.
It's my lifestyle choice.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, exactly.
Respect that.
Like, I'm fucking wearing my stupid bunny suit at right. the grocery store.
Get your Buster sword on your back.
I was going to say, it's just a bit weird when Charles busts out the sword as well with a mask. It's a bit head-scratching. Like, you get it by apples.
Well, see, I've got a big front yard, and so I've been taking the sword out and working on it out front, and I do get some weird looks from the neighbours as they walk past.
Yeah.
I got this big sword.
It's actually my social distancing meter,
right,
measures meter.
Exactly.
Because if I can swing this and touch you, you're
too close. Yep. Exactly.
Step back. I think the big thing, Charles, we quote was, and I don't. This is highlights everything fucking in the world that's wrong. But they hung on the fact that like McDonald's and stuff are reopening because they had live video footage of like fast food restaurants getting bun deliveries and burgers and chips and that, and it's like that's the major thing we're taking away for this, people. New Zealand are going to be able to buy fast food again. That's it's like nothing else matters.
Yeah, no, that has really upset me actually, because we went to level 3, which means takeaway is available, and it's really upsetting how we still are locked down. We're still supposed to keep distances, but then there's footages of people crowding around outside local burger joints. And it's just really upsetting how stupid people are. We've done well, and we've kept the numbers down, but there's a real good chance now that they're going to spike again. Hopefully not.
B&Q open tier, right? There's a grey area. B&Q open tier, right? But apparently B&Q could have been open for the whole thing. Again, the government didn't want to say close down. So the government basically came out and said, yeah, but we want to stop. And like, apparently there's a number of stores that could be open in the real world, but they've chose not to. Common sense! It's rare and it's vital. But B&Q just opened up at the weekend there, which is like catnip to you kind of store. It's like a hardware store, right?
Yep.
And basically there was mile-long queues for people going into the store, but there was also like a two-hour wait for people picking up online. So like, it's click and collect. There's like a two-hour wait for people to come and pick up click and collect deliveries. And you're kind of like, wow. So like right now, the reach here is a supermarket, a pharmacy, or B&Q! Oh my god. But they've opened up four Burger Kings. There are four Burger Kings opening up in the UK. On the whole of the UK, four. Oh my god!
That's gonna be dangerous. Yeah.
Oh man, see when they lift us, it's going to be anarchy, man. You think the news biblical? Jesus, man, wait till it. Woof. Might buy myself a PS Pro just for madness.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
if we all just stay inside, we can happily dream of the day that we can destroy our bodies with fast food again. we just gotta wait a little longer.
Seriously, man, like fucking. Just wait a couple months, and you can... I will... Listen, if you stay in your house, I will buy you some fucking McDonald's.
Yeah, seriously.
I want the nuggets. God damn it. Yeah.
I will buy you the fucking nuggets. Just stay in your house.
I haven't missed it at all.
On a side note, it's calling back to last month, but I now have pineapple-flavored Jaffa Cakes. They are a thing. They are in my kitchen, and I've not ate them yet. I was like, should I have a live review of a pineapple Jaffa Cake?
They won't be as good as pineapple lumps, I'll tell you that.
Without having them to test, I can't try them. So
nothing is better than pineapple lumps.
But that's the thing. Like, I haven't really. We used to eat fast food like back in the day, the good old days.
Two months ago, four times.
But like, I haven't actually missed it. Like,
the before times.
We're gonna have to have a new day calendar. You know, we've got AD, BC and AD that we're going to have yeah. like...
Yeah, it's now BC, BC and AD
yeah.
before COVID-19 and after deaths.
Oh, yeah. My dear.
But I haven't actually missed it. Like, I've actually liked not having the option because it's too easy to go sometimes, I can't be bothered working out what to do for dinner. Yeah. We'll just get burgers.
Whereas now,
I've had a lot of fun making stuff like that I usually wouldn't have made. And I like to cook. It's another one of my weird things I do. And so, but it's been
you're
funny.
You're real weird, Charles. You like to make food.
You like to feed your family. Okay, man.
What a weirdo.
See, yeah. I take the notions, when I shut my eyes, I go, I quite like KFC, but I don't hunger for it. Burger King's the same. If I'm honest, the only thing that really is going to be going is, Chinese food, because, there's no Chinese places open. And it's the one thing I'm kind of like, oh, here. Because you eat a Chinese, it fills you. And you're like, oh, I've got a Chinese belly tonight. I'm going up to the pod for tours. I've done a shift. Time to go and sweat it out.
I just make all that myself. Like I'm.
Yeah, but it's not the same. It's not the same as the excitement of waiting at the door. Is he coming? There's a car. Is it him? No, it's not. Damn it! That's been an hour. It's been over an hour. We've waited for that. And so forth and so on. You don't know. It's tribal. Really tribal. I've been making.
I tried making golden curry. Do you know Japanese curry? You know.
Yeah. The kind of katsu stuff.
Yeah, so like normally we just
golden
use
golden brick in it. You use
there's a brand called Golden Curry that we use most from Japan. Whereas I made it from scratch the other day because I could, I had more time.
So you're in the same wheelhouse as my girlfriend who wants to make. We have the ability to make pizza in the house, and I'm just like, I don't know if I'm at that stage of desperation yet. No, the pizza will be delicious and it will be topped with beautiful things. It'll be a really nice thing because she can cook as well. That's why I'm with her. And it's a case of, I just don't know, it's just that fourth wall. I just don't know if I can break that fourth wall now, you know what I mean? Like, tonight we had a beef biryani, which I love with this, it was beautiful. But I don't know if I'm ready for homemade pizza. I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah, man.
I don't have a stone oven.
You get yourself some dough. I got a recipe for slow rise dough, which takes away the yeasty flavour. It takes like 6 days to rise in the fridge.
And Jesus, the pandemic will be finished by then.
It's good stuff. It's good stuff. But I'll tell you what's a game changer. This is really changing the tune of things. Pressure cookers, man. I got a pressure cooker for Christmas.
Yeah, man. They're fucking great, aren't they?
Fantastic. See, you can stuff slow cookers. Slow cookers is 8 hours for a stew.
Oh, no. Don't you be dissing the slow cooker. We do a mean gammon in the slow cooker.
Oh, I bet. But you can do that in like a tenth of the time in a pressure cooker, and it's the same. Like, so
but
you don't
fill you with the anticipation, the same as the Chinese guy coming. You're sitting there with the slow cooker. Is it happening? The top's all misty and fogged up. I can't see, but you know, the minute you lift that thing, you've ruined the meal. You need to wait and wait and wait, and then there it is, and then you've got the horrible job of just decanting the dead cola out of the dish.
I've been making ramen with pork bones and stuff in my pressure cooker. Usually it would be like a full day's work on a pot, whereas pressure cooker, three hours, and you got yourself some of the best tonkatsu ramen broth. So good.
Pressure cooker.
That's how to survive the apocalypse. Get a pressure cooker and a slow cooker. And somebody that knows how to cook.
Well, that's the thing. My pressure cooker does the slow cooking if you wanted it to as well.
Oh, wow. My
dog's better than your dog. It's a fast and slow cooker.
Oh, well. I've got an air fryer. Air fryers are amazing as well. I love an air... See, Noki and an air fryer. What a treat.
It's called an oven.
No, air fryer fries with air. An oven. Ovens.
Isn't it basically just a tabletop convection oven?
I don't know. It's a black machine that sits next to my slow cooker and next to my toaster.
It's a fancy device.
And it makes a really satisfying ding when it's ready.
My dad got an air fryer for Christmas, and he's obsessed with it. That's the only insight I can offer, but he loves it. So,
yeah, all right, I googled air fryer, and the first result on tasteofhome.com says the air fryer is essentially an amped-up countertop convection oven.
Okay, well,
makes good chips.
It's the yeah,
my dad also has an air fryer, and he quite likes it. So,
the air fryer is the sequel boss fight to the air buster in Final Fantasy VII. Also developed.
I was going to say, is it no the preceder for the George Formby is a ukulele player, as we all know. George Foreman, on the other hand, is a boxer. Yes. But everybody had a George Foreman forever. Do you know what I mean? And then they just disappeared.
Now we all got air fryers.
Yeah,
made by Shinra.
It sounds like air fryers are like dad.
Dads love this kind of stuff. That's why Charles loves
dads
it.
Dads love air
well,
fryers.
No, he doesn't have one yet.
No, I've got one. My mother bought me it.
That's right.
All the way. I just went home. I went home one day. I went down to my mother and she went, here's an air fryer. I never asked for it. She's like, no, take it. But I don't really. What? Okay. And then now, oh, there's no going back. If it ain't air fried chips, I ain't interested.
If you go to your dad's house, there's two things you know you're going to see there. It's an air fryer and it's a George Foreman.
For sure.
Those are the two things.
Yeah, see, I'm not that typical dad, I guess.
Yeah, you have a Buster sword.
he'll make his own air fryer out of twigs and chicken coop wire.
You gotta triple cook chips if you really want to make them right.
Well, I'm not allowed a fat.
Sir Charles, when you say chips, do you mean crisps or do you mean potatoes?
Potatoes,
like fries.
Yeah, fries.
Chips are French fries, right? Yeah.
No, chips are chips. Like,
so
chips,
yeah,
chips.
I just wanted to be sure.
If we have fish and chips.
You weren't using an American affectation. It actually meant
no crisps.
A non-American.
That's
one.
What they're talking about. Crisps.
Crisps are potato chips.
So confused. I thought I understood, but now I'm confused.
So there's chips, which are chips, and there's
which
crisps,
are, which are French are fries.
So what's a biscuit? Yeah,
a biscuit is a...
a cookie.
Well, what's a biscuit? Is a Jaffa cake a biscuit or a cake? No. I know we're deep into this conversation, but there's a fight to be had there. No, a Jaffa cake is a sponge, which makes it a cake, but it's found in the biscuit aisle. But the definition...
Well, what does that tell you?
But the definition of a cake is when you leave a cake out, it goes stale, it goes hard, which a Jaffa cake does. A biscuit goes soft when it's been left out in the air.
So what's a Twinkie? Because they don't go stale.
Twinkies the only thing that will survive. The only way to survive this is to crawl inside a man-sized Twinkie.
That's going to be Trump's next advice.
Cockroach had a hell of a good time.
That's going to be Trump's next advice. Use Twinkies to protect yourself from the coronavirus.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just put Twinkies on your fingers. You'll be fine.
I'll buy that one.
That's all I've learned from apocalyptic movies is that Twinkies is going to be a source of nutrition.
Yeah, I mean, Twinkies and cockroaches. Those are the two things that outlive the apocalypse.
True. Very true.
Anyway, poor Chris is going to welcome Final Fantasy
down
talk.
Corner. Join us next month for...
Well, we'll probably have important conversations about fries.
Yeah.
Chips or fries? What do you call them? None of this pommes frites. We don't like the French. Well, I don't.
do you guys know, as you didn't grow up in America, do you guys know about the push in the post 9/11 world for Americans to call to rename French fries to freedom fries?
Oh, that's dumb. Ooh.
That it's, sounds like something you get with a
because,
it's
because
so
America
embarrassing.
Was really, America was really mad that the France didn't like endorse the war on Iraq. That they wanted to rename French fries to Freedom Fries, and it was one of the funnier things that's ever happened in America, I think.
Insane.
It sounds vaguely familiar.
Insane.
See, French fries, does that describe all
No,
fries?
French fries is the cut of the chip.
Well, no, that's what I would think.
No,
I'm asking the Americans.
I mean, yes, he's right. He is right. I might use it as a blanket term, but there's like a steak fry. There's sweet potato fries. There's different kinds of
your steak
fries.
I think a French
like a
fry is like a julienned chip, if that
yeah.
makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very thin one. It's McDonald's chips. That's what we'd call French fries.
Correct. Yeah, that's what you would call a French fry. That's a classic French fry.
Yeah,
have you seen the latest Civil War bot that's happening? Apparently in Canada, 20 million Canadian potatoes are locked up behind closed doors because all the restaurants are shut. And nobody's buying, everybody's buying exported potatoes. So Canada want to basically eradicate exported potatoes so people can buy Canadian potatoes and use that stock. And apparently, this is a big thing in Canada, so I'm told. But apparently, they're going to do the Trump thing, but instead to people, they're going to do it with potatoes. And they're going to block off all other non-Canadian potatoes till they sell all these Canadian potatoes. Considering that there's nowhere eating them, you know?
Come on, Canada, we trusted you.
I think they're called Canadian Blues or something? I don't know. Also, your Freedom Fries better come with a Liberty Burger. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And a scoop of ice cream on the side, because this is America, and we want to die.
And a waffle.
And a triple jumbo 6 liters liter drink.
Of soda, yes.
You know what, just forget the burger, just pour the bacon grease down my throat.
And it better come with a smile.
We're concerned about our health.
Right.
If it doesn't come with a smile, it's not American.
That's right. That's what we always say.
25% to that dip as well.
The land of
the Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
That's a thinger.
Yeah. I mean, do we want to talk about news first?
Yeah.
Do we really care about this news?
Yeah, it's probably the biggest story of the year, maybe, so far.
Yeah. Last of Us 2, the major story point beats of that game apparently leaked. Apparently, I mean, I read all of them. I know them all. I can spoil them at any time.
Do not. And the moral of the story is only let certain people see certain things while working on your title, or
apparently
don't piss
so.
Those people off. NDAs, people.
Yeah, maybe treat your employees better, Naughty Dog, and then you wouldn't have this issue.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a bit out the blue and a bit weird. And then what came next was even more weird. So, yeah,
like a day later.
Yeah. So, a day after the leak, it was finally announced that the Azup suspended title, that is The Last of Us 2, now has a release date, and our namesake and hero, Ghost of Kojima, also has a release date. But, sadly, no release date for Iron Man VR.
Ooh. Yeah. Still leaving a question mark on
that
one.
That's disappointing.
They took down Last of Us and Iron Man together. Ghost of Kojima's just been floating through space, hoping for the best, and it's finally got its day. Although, as we were discussing, it's kind of a double-edged blade. Because Last of Us comes out a month before it. Yeah, send a bouquet of flowers to the widow of Sucker Punch.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like anyone's very confident in that game if they're really just sort of... They're sticking it out when they are, right after Last of Us, also at the end of the PS4. I mean, I love Samurai, anything, but for whatever reason, I don't feel particularly interested in this game, so I don't know.
I'm super interested.
We're hanging on the thing that there was going to be a PS5 version. It's very odd that the game gets a release date and everybody's talking about, but there's no word on a PS5 upgrade. And it's like, what? Like, can we not just play the game and enjoy it? Because PS, it's like, we're only talking like July into it. By July, we'll have both in our hands and we're like, yay. But we were talking about it. We kind of think it's going to be the last hurrah for the PS4 before the long, slow walk. Before the PS5 comes, but then who knows? Given the situation in the world,
I did some googling of the Ghost of Tsushima because I was curious, because I've basically looked up nothing about this game. I have like no hope that it's a game or that I care about it at all. But so,
watch this, game of the year, folks. You've just
maybe you never know. Like I wasn't too high on Horizon Zero Dawn when that game came out, and then look how much I liked that. Anyway, point being is that I'm reading an article that was published yesterday at 1:30 p.m. on PushSquare.com, titled "Sucker Punch Preparing Ghost of Tsushima Gameplay Reveal for Near Future." So this game is supposed to come out in like 3 months, and we don't even know how it plays yet.
Right.
No, we haven't seen any
gameplay of it.
Yeah, but it's been really like scripted to win it. It originally was a cinematic we saw, and then we saw a cinematic we heavily scripted game. We've not seen like actual HUD up gameplay, I don't think, for what I can remember.
There's also a lot of gameplay doesn't have HUD as well.
But you know what I mean, but you know what I mean. Yeah. You know how you can tell that way between somebody playing it and then somebody actually playing it. You know that way where this guy's moving really cinematic and looking hell of a cool, and then there's me who's like, I'm gonna run back into the zombies.
Running into the wall.
Yeah, hitting the tree. What's the matter with the tree? I can't climb it. Why? I don't know. Just standing and watching the grass even blow in the wind and being like, wow.
But to be fair, Ghost of Tsushima has always had the release date, and I believe it's just been pushed back, and it's probably just more to get Last of Us out.
But it's weird how they've no brought out before it. Plus the fact was the whole thing about the dramatic thing in brackets of them pulling Last of Us 2 like less than a month ago and giving it the whole, it's been pulled indefinitely, which a lot of people are like, oh no, is it going to actually make the release before? Because there was talk it going to be a launch title simultaneously for the PS5 and the PS4, if you know what I mean. But this is obviously totally kiboshed that idea.
Well, do you know what this all means? Is that they realise that Ghost of Tsushima is a better game. And that's why they
maybe.
Timing's entirely possible. For a man who likes samurais, timing's everything. You know that, and I just think it's been mistimed.
I do have an important comment to read on this article. This is from OMG Waffles yesterday at 8:43 p.m.
Okay,
so be good.
Man, I can't wait for this game to drop. It's stunning. may have to upgrade to the PS4 Pros. I'm thinking my OG PS4 may explode playing this, lol. It already sounds like a jet when playing GOW or The Witcher 3. Mm. Pray for my OG PS4, guys. I'm trying to make it last till the PS5 drops, lol.
Mm. Love the lol.
Don't worry. I'm going to throw in a few menu stories here because I just want to because of comedy in them. Don't worry, because you'll be able to pick up that awesome Cyberpunk Xbox 4 months before the game's released. What is with that? Like, what is that about? It's like, oh, hey guys, look, I'm an influencer and I've got a Cyberpunk controller. Yeah, it's amazing. It's like, hey guys, I've got a Ferrari jacket. I've got a Ferrari jacket, but I don't get the car till September. Yeah. It's like, what the hell? It's like, buy a special edition console for a series you haven't played and you may hate the guts of, but buy it today and save. It's like, yeah, it's like, see when you push a game back, want to push back all the merch and connection stuff as well, because Funko Pop released the figures as well. It's like, do I want a Funko Pop or Keanu Reeves?
Yes. I don't want a Funko Pop.
No, but it's like, it could be a dick. It could be the worst character in gaming history.
True. There's some really high-end, expensive figures coming out for Cyberpunk as well, which is...
McFarland are doing them. Yeah. I know the McFarland ones are out there now, because that's the one where you get Keanu with Gitaru, and it's like, oh, wow, he's got a guitar! It's like, I thought he was like a hitman or something. Why has he got a guitar? What part does this play in the game? Well, no, till September. Jesus, man. I think that's a really weird... It's just an odd thing. And it reeks of, like... It's not even like the people who buy the console get a copy of the game, I think. I think they just get the console. It's like, oh, what am I meant to do? Oh, wait, I'll just buy the game when it comes out. It's dreadful.
The writing heavy on the credit that Witcher 3 earned them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is, isn't it? It's the CD Projekt Red, kind of. In no way, shape, or form am I dissing the guys, because they've proven they can do it. But they also proved that they created Roach, and Roach was buggy as hell and didn't work forever, and still doesn't work forever, if I'm honest. So just imagine a whole game where Roach is the core, and you're kind of like, that's not right. But I don't know. I just think it's weird that they're releasing hardware connected to a title.
It is very weird.
So far away from launch. I get the controller, right? A controller's a controller, right? Yes, it gets a bit of interest and it keeps people interested, blah, blah, blah. But releasing a high-end spec console that's going to cost like an extra £100 premium on top of the default one is a bit... It's a bit ballsy, you know what I mean?
Especially when a new generation's out in a few months, too.
Right.
That's why they've done it, isn't it? They've done it so that basically whoever buys this machine, the new, gets 6 months of pure gold and a month of it being able to run Cyberpunk before the new version comes out on the Xbox X.
Yeah, well, that's probably it. They planned it to be a lot earlier, and so they figured we've got the stock, we better sell it before no one buys it.
Well, the game's meant to be... This is the thing. The game should be in hand in the new. We should all be
playing it,
being
yeah.
Cyberpunk-y. Do you know what I mean? But it's just not happening, so...
Well,
yeah, I thought that was a weird one.
We can kind of be steampunky, cyberpunky with Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah,
that's right.
True. Although
Final Fantasy VII remake.
So
subtitle, not a descriptor.
So we call a stealth segue.
Yes, that's a very important distinction.
Join us next month where I talk about Stadia getting an EA contract.
there's a story. Stadia. I forgot. That's the thing I've done since the last time we recorded. I used Stadia.
What?
And you never went back.
I played one game of Crucible in Destiny 2 on Stadia. Posted like a 5.9 efficiency and was top fragger on the team, and then never played it again. Because it's
Were
bad.
You happy?
I mean, I did well, but it's that platform is both bad, and everybody that plays Destiny on it is very bad.
But there was a live conference today at 5 showing you all the beautiful things. PUBG's available in Stadia.
I did see that.
And you got a Stadia helmet, which is red, which makes you a target, and a Stadia frying pan, which is red, and makes you
which
an
makes
even
you a
bigger
target.
I think the only thing to walk away for that is they announced a few more titles coming, but I think the EA deal is probably the most interesting thing, because they've done a deal with EA for 5 years support, which at the moment doesn't seem great. And you're, oh, I've played Fallen Order and I've played Madden. I've no personal played Madden. I don't like American football. It's a case of, could EA pull a sneaky exclusive out the bag and go, available on Stadia, and only on Stadia, you could play Mirror's Edge Good, or Black 2, or something, or brace yourself, Skate 3, and that would be a game changer, I think. I think that's when people start sitting up, but we're still in the levels of, played it 7 months ago, mate, I've done it, I've completed it. I don't really need to play it again, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But interesting news. Stadia, they sound as if they're having a great time. They're all happy. Always happy people in Stadia. But yeah, I just don't know. I think the EA deal is bigger than what a lot of people give it credit for. But we'll no see the fruits of that labour for a wee bit, I think. But you ain't going to see Final Fantasy VII Remake on it anytime soon. Pew, pew.
Nice segue. You ruined my last one.
At least I get in my role. Pew, pew.
Can we talk about Final Fantasy VII now? I'm getting desperate.
We can talk about Final Fantasy VII now. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
I was going to talk about Predator Hunt.
It only took an hour for us to get to the thing that Chris is here for.
Sorry, Chris.
Hey, that's all right. I know how podcasting works.
He was sitting with nothing better to do, and then we've got a man with a mental dilemma between
Chris podcasts
and fries.
With Jeremy Greer. So
he's like, he's going to come off this podcast and go, God damn, I'm happy I'm in America. Can't handle these people. God damn tourists.
Well, anyway, Final Fantasy VII. I figured we could just start off with a quick fire, jump the gun, or initial thoughts of the game.
Mm-hmm. Right. Let's do it. Okay. You first.
I like it. Although I will say, in general, like the one thing I really dislike is like that Reaper fight, and I'm not a big fan of War Market. I'm a bit disappointed by War Market.
Interesting. Okay, we'll get to that.
Yep.
Chris, what do you think of it?
I have criticisms, but I love it.
See, sure. Same as me.
I'm the baby of the group, so this is my first ever experience. She was gentle. I really liked it for what it is and what it does, but I know my views are null and void in all shapes and forms because I have no history with it.
Honestly, other than a myth. I appreciate that we have a newbie to Final Fantasy VII to talk about.
See, when we do the podcast, I'm going to make sure every one of you gets put in your place with COD, right? I'll make sure every one of you is willing to write chat. You know what I mean? See, when we do Halo 5 cast, 6 cast, or Guardians, I will be fucking telling you how it is. Anyway, sorry. I really enjoyed it for what it is, and for a thing that has is one of the cornerstones of Western gaming in so many ways, I felt it was really well handled, and I kind of want to see how long we're going to have to wait for the next installment.
Yeah, I the only thing I can say as my top level review is I came out of this game like absolutely fucking like voracious for part two.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big word, Brian.
That's a huge word, my friend. That's a Buster Sword size word, my friend.
That's right.
Not as good as trombone, but
yeah. Now, Brian, yeah. You mentioned a minute ago that Final Fantasy VII Remake, the word remake isn't a descriptor, it's a subtitle. And I think that that's such an important distinction. And I think it's a really interesting idea, I guess, that none of us knew going into it. But when you've completed the game and you look back and you realize, oh, remake is a subtitle, like rebirth or anything like that. Like, it could be one of those kind of words. And it's this game is a great remake of the first part of Final Fantasy VII, and also a great commentary on remakes.
Yeah.
Retelling.
I think Chris, you said you. I don't think you sent me the tweet, but like you sent me a message like where we talked where you had seen someone talking about remake being a subtitle rather than a descriptor, like that like has like dominated my thoughts ever since.
Should we put out a spoiler warning for the game, or are we going to take it slow?
I mean, I guess, I don't know. Like, everybody knows what they're getting into, right?
This is a spoiler cast. It'll be
yeah,
foreshadowed. And...
It's the Buster Sword spoiler cast. It's okay.
Wait a minute. Yeah. What's that? I hear some kind of warning, a spoiler warning siren in the background.
My ATV meter's going up again.
Insert Final Fantasy sound.
Yeah.
But we should wait to get super into that until we get to the end of the game if we're going to talk about it like along the way.
Okay.
Are we doing like? I know Charles is biting at the bit to do a blow by blow all
yeah,
14 chapters worth.
18. 18 chapters.
18. Oh, Jesus. I was trying to be nice to myself there.
to be fair.
That might take time.
I put in prompts for each chapter, and they kind of, how the chapters go, kind of help us talk about mechanics and characters. And so that's why I kind of did it this way.
See, I was going to say, we could do it like the structure I use in a review. I usually do story, I do gameplay, I do visuals, I do voice acting, and then I do the bad bits at the end, because nobody ever gets that far in the review. Because that kind of... But if you want to go blow by blow, we can go blow by blow.
Blow by blow.
We can start off blow by blow and see how it goes, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, man. Listen, it's a podcast. We can do whatever
we want. Yeah, it's a podcast. We'll find our way.
As my man once said, it's our goddamn podcast. And if we want to inject Dell, we'll inject Dell.
So, Charles, since you want to go blow by blow, why don't you take the lead here?
All right. So, I really like that it started off basically like shot for shot.
Yeah, like literally just basically this is the exact same thing as the original.
You've skipped the important bit. You've skipped the 90 gig install.
Yeah.
For doing it, we're going all the way.
Yeah. Also, did anyone watch that final trailer that was released before the game came out? Because I watched that trailer today, and it just spoils the whole thing. It's crazy.
Really?
Okay, it is crazy. All of
because I had heard that it was very spoilery, so...
I mean, maybe without context, it isn't that spoilery, but there's so much stuff that you see in that trailer that you would say that, I mean, that's not in the original game. That's crazy. That's different. So I don't know who that trailer was for, but watching it beforehand would have been a bad idea.
I just don't watch trailers anymore because for that reason, and I'm glad I didn't. Like, I know I was excited for this game. I was just so mad I couldn't get my physical copy, and I had to buy digital.
There will be physical copies in the future.
Speaking of that, I liked this game so much that I bought a physical copy of it.
I did, too. I can't even... I paid for this game twice.
See, I don't know if I can justify that. It may happen, but I don't know if I can.
Hey, it'll be on sale at some point. Maybe you can pick it up for cheap. They just have it on your shelf.
They've actually they've delayed the release of it. Like, it's all the stores opening back up, and then we'll start shipping again. And it's like, oh, the release date of Final Fantasy is 15th of May. I'm like, no, it's not. It happened last month. But it's real weird. They've got a new physical release date, which hasn't happened yet.
So how did you feel and this question for everybody, how did you feel watching that opening cutscene?
Excited.
Yeah, that's really the only thing. Like, I didn't realize that I cared about Final Fantasy VII this much.
Yeah, I knew I always liked it, but man, like, hearing that music and seeing those visuals, even though I had already seen them in trailer form and I saw them in the demo, seeing it for real in the real game, it hit all those nostalgia buttons. And once you do that, it's too late.
Yeah, man, because going beyond Final Fantasy VII, playing the other games as I was growing up, like, I liked Final Fantasy VII growing up, like, but I would still say that my favorite Final Fantasies are 6 and 8, but man, did I not realize just how much I really do like Final Fantasy VII, and, like, seeing that opening scene and, like, seeing, like, the shit that we saw in 1997, but, like, this?
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. Just unbelievable.
Well, end of Crisis Core, it moves after the final cutscene, it moves into the start of the Final Fantasy VII cutscene. And boy, did I get excited. I was wiping tears from my eyes. And I swear, like, this is Crisis Core, and this is, like, the only games that have actually made me tear up. Like, I just don't care usually. And just the excitement. I remember messaging my brother going, they're going to remake Final Fantasy VII finally. And what was that, like 10 years ago?
It was 2015. Yeah, I I couldn't believe what I was seeing when they announced that. But, man, yeah, that intro, it really hits. The music, the visuals, everything.
Well, no, I mean the Crisis Core, when the Crisis Core
ended. Oh, Crisis Core. Oh, 10
years ago. And I thought they were going to do it then. And, like, I was...
Oh, man.
I was, like, super excited then. And, like, so I've been waiting for this for a very long time. And then they finally announced it 5 years ago. And now this...
Yeah. Oh, man.
As a full face, Rob, does Crisis Core and this bolt together then, technically? Because I know...
Yeah, they do.
No jumping the gun, but there's elements with Crisis Core and stuff involved in it, and they're in a kind of weird twisted way for my rubbish outlook on life.
Yes.
Do they actually kind of butterfly joint, or is it kind of just off a little bit that they kind of do it, but they miss?
A Crisis Core retconned a little bit of Final Fantasy VII, I believe, but it fits in with the canon of VII. It basically is the story of how Cloud got to Midgar, but you actually play as Zack. So it's Cloud's a sub character in Crisis Core, and so it is a prequel, and from what I remember, it fits in snugly in a cozy blanket, wrapped up.
So that bombing mission, huh? Chapter one.
Yes. <Good point.
laughs> I don't want to speak out of turn here, but this might be one of my favorite intros to a video game ever.
Don't know, Metal Gear swimming into Shadow Moses is pretty
that's
good.
Got some good stuff. That's true.
God of War carrying my dead wife up a mountain.
the use of music throughout.
Death Stranded carrying my dead maw up a mountain.
Oh, true. Lots of carrying baby Norman Reedus.
Oh, yeah, carrying many dead folk up a mountain. But
Sharp Stewart.
You were all thinking it, goddammit.
No, I agree, Chris. I was trying to get Odin into Final Fantasy VII, and he's reluctantly been playing it. But
how old is he now?
Is that
10.
Outlawed by the record?
I was 8 years old when I played Final Fantasy VIII, and it did kind of ruin me as a person, I think. But it was he's an appropriate age now to be getting into it. So
it's more because his dad is telling him to. Like,
I know.
He did it with Spider-Man, like refused to play it, and then he finally picked it up on his own, and he's like, I love this game. And so I think it's just
that's the thing.
Timing.
Leave loads of copies of it around your house.
Yeah.
And then, like, weave it underneath your toilet paper so when he goes to change the role, he's like, oh, Final Fantasy VII.
I'll just go at night when he's sleeping, whisper in his ear, play Final Fantasy VII.
Just hum the music from it.
Just cut out box quotes like, IGN says 10 out of 10, and GameSpot says a phenomenal outcome.
Stop trying to derail us, Stuart. I agree with you, Chris. Is the fact that it basically just throws everything at the wall. Like, it's intense. There's action. Mm-hmm. There's mystery. You have no idea what's going on. You're just this arrogant prick that's turned up with a big sword.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
And
yeah, Cloud's a real jerk throughout this first chapter.
Yeah, boy. We talked about that in the last episode. I was really mad at how much of an asshole he was.
Thankfully, they tone it down pretty quickly, but yeah, it's a lot at first. And I get it. He's around strangers, and I think it's like when he's around Tifa, he's like, oh, she knows me from high school, so I have to like be chill. I can't act like the cool dude who went off to college anymore.
I can't look like a super badass because she knows what I'm really like.
I can't be college Cloud.
She'll call me out. She'll call me out. She'll go, what you been a dick for?
She knows I peed my pants in middle school, so I can't act cool for her.
But yeah,
but
it,
around
is, a, it
Barrett
is a great
and
intro.
Jesse, yeah, the way that they use the music, and it swells during battle and then it like calms back down, but it keeps the driving momentum going forward. I was so impressed even in the demo, and then even more so playing the actual game, how well they just handled the production of that whole first chapter. And even if the rest of the game sucked, which I don't think that, but even if it did, that first chapter being as good as it is would still make this a pretty enjoyable game, I think.
Yeah.
See, I think that the first chapter was hyper polished up, because that's what, like, they showed at all the expos and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what they showed press pre-launch, was that whole entrance up to the Scorpion tank thing. Big spider thing inside the reactor thing. You know what I'm talking about. and I think that's been so mirror polished, it was never going to be anything but amazing, you know?
Right.
But they also have great content. Like the original, that's also a good intro to a game with story beats and what's happening. It's not just the gameplay in the remake. The actual story that it's based on was great as well. Like, it's a great start to an RPG. It's an action-packed start.
Yeah.
And then the slow burn comes after that, where we start actually getting all the... what's actually happening in the world. The slow
exposition and all that. It is really interesting. And then they took the opposite approach with Final Fantasy VIII, being like, we're going to start it like it's a school day vibe. Everything's very mellow, which is obviously, it was a purposeful choice made in reaction to Final Fantasy VII. But then, you know, it feels good coming back to this intro. And they do a really great introduction to the combat, though I think having you play as Cloud alone for so long, in my mind, at least, it kind of tricked me into thinking it was more of an action game than it is.
Yes.
Because obviously, as you go, you learn the importance of having to switch between the characters. And if you're basing your experience or your playstyle on playing as Cloud in the beginning, then you're going to be having a lot of issues, because the AI, they're waiting for you to tell them what to do. It still operates the same way that, you know, the original battle system worked, essentially.
Yeah, it's still a JRPG. Like, characters won't, like, do their, other than their basic action, they won't do anything by themselves.
I've seen a lot of complaints about that, and I guess that is justified, because a lot of modern action JRPGs will have AI that is healing and is casting their own spells and stuff. But once I feel like I learned what I needed to do with Final Fantasy VII Remake, I loved it. I loved having that full control over my party at all times.
Yeah, I would say that, like, there's definitely room in this game for, like, the Final Fantasy XII Gambit system, mm-hmm. something along those lines to be in the game, and hopefully maybe in Part 2 they will add something like that, because the auto-cure materia is nice, but wasn't that useful later on in the game, mm-hmm. and it would be nice if there was ways to automate some of that, even if it's still through materia, right? Like, give me an auto Kira, an auto Kiraga, whatever, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, there might be more. Yeah, there's going to be more materia added. Well, see, that's. Yeah. Did you guys get into hard mode much? Like, I'm up to chapter 11 in hard mode.
Oh, wow. No, I haven't started it yet. That has been on my back burner, I guess, while I went back and played other Final Fantasies.
And it's bouncing off what you see, Chris, with the combat. Like, I thought I was good at the game and was doing well playing through the main story. You get into hard mode and you realize that I had no idea how the combat worked.
Because you're not the first person that's told me this.
Because you really then learn how to be functional with the combat. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing what you can turn out. And the damage you can actually output when you're actually using Tifa correctly, or using even Cloud correctly. And because you can't waste energy. I don't know if you know, in hard mode, your MP, you get at the start of your chapter, and that's all you get.
Oh, wow.
Like, it doesn't heal when you sit at benches. No. Like, the only way you get it back is by breaking the crates for Mako shards.
And damn. And you can obviously siphon it using Aerith's ability. And there is a inbuilt during combat regeneration system, and there are things you can do to make that increase. Like, there's one trade-off, so you have when you get hit, you get more MP back. But still, like, you get to the point where you might have been a bit frivolous with your magic, and you get halfway through a chapter, and I'm like, I can't actually beat this boss now because I don't have enough MP.
Right.
And you really need to plan ahead. So I'm using materia that I never touch. Like, chakra is super important in hard mode.
Oh, yeah.
Prayer is important because they don't take MP. They're just an ability.
Yes.
And things that were useful in the first playthrough are now just pointless in the second playthrough. So
I will say that one of my big things that unlocked the combat in that game for me was when I realized that Tifa's her abilities, like her triangle abilities, could be used to increase the damage multiplier on staggered enemies.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
That changed the game when that happened.
Oh yeah, everyone would assume Cloud's your kind of damage DPS character, but Tifa is. She's phenomenal.
Well,
she is a true badass.
You know, that's classic. Like, Cloud is the all rounder. Mm-hmm. Baron is the tank, Tifa is DPS, and Aerith is a healer, right?
Yeah, that's true. But it's insane what she can do. My biggest gripe with that is bosses who break out of their stagger gauge because of a pre-designated...
Yep, that's very frustrating.
Yeah.
Because it undermines that whole mechanic, like, just 100%. Like, it doesn't allow you to be bitter. There's like there's set points that you have to stick to with certain bosses, which drives me, that drives me crazy. But yeah, so you know about her. It took me a while to learn about her chi because I don't know what they're talking about.
that increases her overpower ability or whatever.
Yeah, so she has three levels.
Overpower, whatever the fuck it's called.
She's got whirlwind.
Yeah, the whirlwind uppercut is maybe whatever it is.
Yeah, and then Omni hit or something.
Yeah.
And then
Omni strike.
Right, Omni strike.
Rise and fall.
Rise and fall. And her number of combos, she basically can stay in the sky for like ever if she has rise and fall.
Yeah, and the more combos you do, the more damage she does, and it's very exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I was. This is going ahead a little bit, but that's fine. Let's talk about everybody's favorite character, Chadley.
Oh, Chadley.
Fucking Chadley. One of his materia that you get early on, one of his summon materia, is you have to fight Fat Chocobo, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I got my stagger multiplier on Fat Chocobo up to like 360%.
Damn.
Yeah, I need to go.
And I was just like, this is crazy. Like,
that's one of the trophies is 300. That's what I'm next time I see him. That's what I'll be doing when I get Tifa back and can go talk to him. I'll be doing that because I've done the 200 for the battle intel.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, make sure when you do that also you give Tifa the refocus materia.
Oh yeah,
because having helps. Three ATB gauges is insane.
Yeah. So yeah, chapter 2. Not to like jump ahead of this or anything, but I was just looking through the notes a little bit, and I think chapter 2 was weirdly the point where I started to get a little worried about the direction they were going to take this in. I was fine with them making changes, but chapter 2 is when you've escaped the destruction of the reactor. That now we know that Shinra made the destruction way worse and then wants to just blame it all on Avalanche was kind of a big, not story change, but it enhances sort of what was already there. But when Cloud is running through, you know, those parts of Midgar and he sees Sephiroth and starts seeing his visions of Sephiroth, that's where I was like, oh no, are we gonna get too into this? Is Sephiroth gonna be here all the time talking to Cloud and saying this stuff? And he does appear now and again. And I like Sephiroth. I like the way that he has appeared in multiple games, and I like the relationship between him and Cloud.
We talk about Sephiroth's voice actor for a second?
Sure.
The fucking, like, golden honey-dripping tenor that his voice has is unbelievable.
Yeah. They've done a really good job of making him, I guess, sensual is the word.
Yes.
Not in, like, a sensual, not sexual. There's almost that seductive quality of like somebody you'd get on like the dark side of the force in Star Wars, like somebody who is trying to draw you in with something. And at first I was just worried that we were going to get Sephiroth like every other minute and Cloud was going to have headaches every other minute. I mean, he has one in the reactor in the original game. It starts off front and center in the original as well, but I didn't want it to be too overwhelming. But as it went, I did like the way that they handled it.
Yeah, I felt like they balanced it pretty well with like keeping, like reminding you that he was around, without it being a constant thing.
Right.
But the other major thing in chapter 2 is the whispers, like the these dementors that are floating around all
they're
over
new,
the place.
Isn't they weren't in there.
They are brand new.
Yeah, they are arbiters of fate. Right. They are trying to essentially stop the events. Of the
they're
first
like Sarah Connor.
Yeah, they're trying to stop the events of the original Final Fantasy VII from changing in the remake. Yes. They are the angry gamers who
they're
don't
the
want
angry
changes. And it's so that's like the
screaming.
Meta commentary comes in. It's this group of creative people who have made a lot of video games, a lot of Final Fantasy games, saying, okay, we're going to remake. We're going to write the book that we already wrote. I wrote Lord of the Rings, and now I'm going to write Lord of the Rings again. It's not Lord of the Rings 2. It's just the same thing again. Like, that would be so...
But better.
But that would be so boring. And I just... It's like, they took the initiative to be creative and to make a commentary on remakes and on the series. And they do that with these whispers. Which, I get a lot of people really don't like them. A lot of people really think that they're... I don't know, too much like Kingdom Hearts or something, or too much.
Yeah,
like
I mean,
the
those people are wrong, but it's okay.
I just, I, wanted really badly to know what their deal was the whole time, and then when I found out what their deal was, I was kind of into it.
Because like you see them throughout the game, and like you barely know, like you don't know what they are like right away. Like you just see them like attacking Aerith basically, right. Like in this first scene, and you see them like basically like you start to realize throughout the game that they are like influencing events mm-hmm. that are happening throughout the game. And if you are someone who has played the original game and has a good memory of it, you can recognize that some of those things are like when something is happening that didn't happen in the original game.
Yeah.
They will make sure that thing does not happen.
Right. Even here when they're attacking Aerith, it seemed like she was trying to like hang around and help out Cloud when she saw that he was in trouble and wasn't going to go away and they weren't going to part ways. And then she would have been, in danger when Shinra showed up to come after Cloud. So instead of having that happen, the whispers intervene, and it's these weird events that just keep popping in over and over again. It must be weird to see it and not know that those weren't originally there. Right. I don't know.
Yeah, Stuart, did you have like any reaction to these guys other than, oh, this is some weird fucking ghosts?
Yeah. Well, until you know the kind of undercurrent of what they are, it's the bit where the kind of, is it, you get in a fight and they grab you and, or you and your Cloud and Aerith, they basically throw you away for a fight. I'm kind of like, because you don't really know if they're good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of, in the early game, because, well, why would they be saving you for a battle and stuff, you know what I mean? And then it's just a kind of entity thing. You think it's maybe going to be, oh, they're the good guys, or they're good guys, some lost spirits or some shenanigans. But no, like I say, until you know what they are, you just kind of take them for what they are, you know what I mean? They appear, they disappear, and they're there and thereabouts at any given point in time, you know what I mean? But they are kind of neutral, I think. That's what I kind of feeling was going through it. They kind of don't really want to kill you, but they kind of do want to kill you at times. No.
They just want to keep things the way that they're supposed to be.
Hmm.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about them. I had no real concern with them being added. And, like, I think the remake was done so well, I was thinking, were they in the original? Like, at first, I'm like, were there allusions to something? And you start misremembering things, if that makes sense, you know?
Right, yeah, right.
But do you think...
It's kind of like, to explain how I'm thinking about it, when I like the Harry Potter movies so much that when I read the books or listen to the audiobooks, I visualize those scenes in movies. And when I rewatch the movies, mm-hmm. I'm like, hold on, I thought that scene was in the movie because it becomes so real.
Yeah, exactly. It is sort of that remembering thing where I'm more likely to rewatch a Harry Potter movie because it's a short experience. And then a few years ago, reread the books and being like, wait a second, what? I don't remember being like this. And that is sort of like, I mean, that's in many ways, that's what this is. This is the movie version of Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah.
I think they put them in as a kind of a plot device, and the fact that obviously at the tail end, things happen.
And yeah,
they become like a bookmarker, if you know what I mean, in a kind of weird, kind of bookend to this chapter.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, was it basically what came first, the big monstery monster, or them? And then they went, well, wait a minute, guys, we can actually use these things to create a nice conclusion in a way. Or do you think they went, right, this is the bad guy, let's rework this to the beginning and try and work out how
we knowing this. Final Fantasy, it was, oh, let's make this cool looking bad guy. Now let's figure out how to make it,
right,
make it
right.
work in this video game.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Final Fantasy has always had very loose connections between things like that. In like in Final Fantasy VIII, for example, a lot of people really don't like the twists that happen later in the game, because it's like, oh, suddenly there's time travel and all this crazy stuff that's out here.
Squall is dead.
Right, and thematically, all of it lines up. All of it makes sense. It's about growing up, about losing your memories, losing your connections to people. All these core things, but they're like, no, but it's a time witch. And everybody playing the game is like, what? And of course it is speaking to a core theme, but on paper, it just seems insane. I think that the use of the whispers throughout helps soften the blow of this insane thing that comes at the end. And maybe this is too soon to be asking this question, but is Sephiroth trying to get Cloud and his friends to defeat these protectors of fate? Is that what his goal is here? Like,
well, you said the whole thing about how Sephiroth plays the part of Darth Vader, and
well, more like Emperor Palpatine, I think, than Darth Vader. But yes,
cloak and he's got a cool mask and a lightsaber. But when you say that, it kind of makes sense because through the game, he is trying to ally with. He's doing the Virgil Dante thing. He's trying to get him to ally with him, isn't he?
Yeah.
And this whole join me and be by my side and we'll eat ice cream.
I mean,
he
literally asks Cloud to join him at the end of the game. Like,
yeah. And it's kind of like, he is that kind of guy, isn't he? So again, he's no real, he is the big bad and they paint him as the big bad and quite rightly so. He is, you know what I mean? That's the whole point, is you're not going to have one of the greatest enemies in JRPG history and no get mileage out of the guy, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Next episode, he kills a village of children just because.
So it is interesting, and again, I know I'm jumping ahead, but it is in the better interest, I guess, of both parties, both the good guys and the bad guys, to change the fate of the original game, right?
What? Well, do they though?
We don't know what's going to happen, but yeah. You know, we lose. Party members in the original, and though they quote unquote save the world, there is still there are massive issues left. The world does suffer a calamity, and then Advent Children happens, and even though they thought they won, there's a movie of bad things happening again. So yep. It seems like it is sort of in the best interest of both to want to maybe change fate. Although, of course, Cloud and everybody, none of them know that they're changing fate. It seems like Sephiroth is the only one who is aware of anything that could be
reasonably
happening.
Certain that Sephiroth knows that.
Yeah.
What is going on here?
Right. And again, I keep jumping ahead. I apologize, getting too excited. We're on chapter 2 or chapter 3 at this point. Side quest. You guys want to talk
about
side quest?
And we're talking about Sephiroth. It makes sense.
Yeah.
The last thing I was going to say was how you were talking about the whole timeline thing and time travel. Do you think this is a kind of a separate dimension line of thinking? So technically, the Final Fantasy you know and love is happening in the real time above this or below this in theory, and basically they'll merge the time streams into one and rewrite history, because I know other elements we'll talk about are coming up. I know from things I've read and people have seen and stuff that characters are living that shouldn't be living now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a major thing, and people are saying like this could be a dimensional thing now, and
that's what I'm worried about.
At the end, dimensions become an element in the tale, didn't they? There's a bit of portal jumping going on, and a bit of kind of we're in the space between space.
Yeah,
what do you mean?
I hope
not.
I
mean, this is now Interstellar.
That's my biggest concern. Like, I really enjoyed the game, I enjoyed the story, and I enjoyed the ending. And then I started thinking about it, and then I started talking to people, and I'm like, I hope not.
I don't like people. I'm going to go into lockdown.
I'm not sure if it was Yoshinori Kitase or one of the other big wigs at Square Enix, basically defying everything that Nomura says in his interviews by saying they're
driving to the bank in a Ferrari laugh.
Yeah, things are going to continue as you expect them to continue with Final Fantasy VII. He's like, we're not changing literally everything. You're still going to have the similar story beats, visit similar locations, all that stuff. I mean, who knows if that's an outdated comment or if he's full of it, but I hope that they don't go too crazy metaphysical with it. I don't necessarily want dimension hopping and stuff.
No.
But if they're able to handle it well, it could be interesting, or it could at least add interesting dimensions, for lack of a better term, to the story.
Yeah. I guess I'll save my thoughts until we get to the actual ending section. So side quests. Do you guys like that they've been added into the game?
They were fine. I mean, most of them are pretty basic. Some of the ones that you get later on are really cool, but I think for now they're just general. Like, I think I was probably texting you, Chris, when I got to kill some rats, and I was like, oh boy, I got to kill some rats.
Now
this is really an RPG.
This is just like, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, do you think they feel like padding, having been there and done it, and obviously the padding, because you're taking, 2-3 hours worth of gameplay and stretching it at 40. But do you feel that it was unnecessary padding for use, or do you feel it was part of the course? Because I thought they were just part of the course. It's like,
it was just, here's some side quests in your RPG, like, go kill some rats, go.
It seemed pretty normal. we're,
go
we're
collect
not,
an item.
Yeah, whatever, it's not world-ending situations all the time. It's not these insane avalanche attacks all the time. Sometimes it's just working for money.
Yeah.
And yeah, it just seemed like kind of extended tutorial. Seemed like, hey, you want to hang out with Tifa? We know you do. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, I like that they kind of justified it insofar as like, well, people in town will like you and trust you more if you do some work for them.
Yeah.
And, you know, Cloud's a mercenary, so
yeah,
make some money and you'll get more jobs, right?
Right.
I love that so it made sense.
It makes sense.
Yeah, it made sense. Because in the original, like, he's the mercenary, but, like, he's literally done one job. Like,
he does one job in the whole game.
Yeah. And so I kind of like that it's not, even though it's over a space of a few days, this kind of whole event, things are happening within those days rather than just being like, okay, we just sat at the bar for the last 12 hours.
Yeah. Right.
And I like that it gives us more flavor to the world and characters. Like, yeah, we get to learn.
Yeah.
Originally, like, I didn't dislike Tifa, but I never had, she wasn't one of my main characters I used. I never had much thought to it. It's for her. Aerith was the one for Cloud in my mind as a teenage me. Whereas I actually like Tifa a lot more. Like, we actually know who she is and we get to know her a lot more. She's strong, she's badass. And yeah, she's a cool character. And
so you're saying, Charles, is that you weren't horny for Tifa as a teen.
He was a respectable young man, Ryan.
No.
So her and like everybody else just keeps showing up at
swiftly moving along.
Yeah, I was trying to save you from having to answer that. So Cloud's next door neighbor.
Come back to that later. We'll rate our favorites.
Cloud's next door neighbor is a Genova offspring? Is that what we're to be led to believe here?
I guess.
But in the original, aren't almost all of the encounters with Sephiroth actually just one of these Genova clones?
Yes, that
somebody can correct me if I'm wrong.
You
that
only,
sounds right.
You
it's
only,
something about the fact that you never really see real Sephiroth until like the end of the game.
Literally.
I could be wrong about that.
No, that is correct. Except for the flashbacks, obviously. Like he was the real Sephiroth in the flashbacks and those sections. But yeah, that's the thing, and I think I liked that I kind of made that more prominent and more clear. Because like that's literally something that people could have missed or was like a reveal right at the end of the game. Like the only time you see Sephiroth is when you go into his little hole.
Yeah, when you go into his hole, that's when you finally get to see him. But yeah, that is true. That's the only, and that's why it's such a striking version of him in that final exchange of blows, where that's the only time in the game that you're seeing Sephiroth as he truly is, outside of flashbacks. So yeah, I like that they kind of just throw this guy here. It probably feels very confusing, even if you haven't seen some of the outside material, like Advent Children, or I don't know, Crisis Core, any of this other stuff. It seems to focus a little bit more on Sephiroth or the Genova stuff. Because just throwing it in here, it's like, wait, who is this drunk guy who's this drug addict who lives next door to Cloud?
The same thing happened in the original, but it was later on, wasn't it? Because you just talk to a guy in a tunnel, like he's just like, where was that? Was that in Sector 7?
Might be.
There's a guy in a tunnel. You get it's like a little, basically like an old drain pipe from memory, and he lives in it.
Yeah.
I can't remember what section that's in though.
It could be in the Sector 6 like ruins or whatever in between. I don't know. But yeah, there is somebody back there. I know who you're talking about.
And so it's. They just kind of made it more forefront rather than being potentially missed or because that's the thing. Those guys with the numbers on them in the original, it was so spread out and so kind of like such a side thing. Whereas they've just kind of, just condensed.
They brought it to the forefront in an appropriate way, I think.
Yeah.
Because then later on when there's a story function, you go, oh, okay. Yeah, I know what that is. I saw him earlier.
Yeah, exactly. Materia. This is where we learn more about Materia with our little, you mentioned earlier.
Chadley. You know how he has a very stilted, strange way of talking, and I tried to fight Shiva and to unlock that materia just one-on-one as Cloud. I had no one else in my party when I first attempted it.
What a
so
hero.
I died twice, and having to listen to Chadley talk to me after I died when I'm like frustrated from losing a battle, and he's like, well, Cloud, just I gathered some... I'm like, Chadley, I'm about to take you out back and give you the Buster Sword, bro. You need to calm down.
You might like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I ought to rephrase that. See, I'm gathering intel, Cloud. Thanks.
You do it so well. But
I'm just scrolling back in our DMs trying to find our conversation about Chadley.
Chadley. Oh, man. Oh, man.
I think it was an interesting addition. It was very Crisis Core-ish. Like, mm-hmm. having that kind of science research element to materia, which I think fit and works.
Yeah, that aspect of it is very fitting, for sure.
What do you think about the summon change? How it's like you have one summon per character?
I think I was fine with it. I'm not even sure if I knew how to actually, like, ever activate them on purpose, but they always felt like, for me, just sort of an emergency thing. In most Final Fantasies, I don't actively use summons. So I was fine with the way that they implemented it.
It's definitely better than 15, like, because it's a similar kind of idea that they turn up when they feel like it.
Yeah.
But at 15, it was, like, almost never, and it was just kind of end of the game. Into the fight, basically. Whereas I kind of liked how this was like a mix of, is it 10 they come and fight for you?
Yeah, 10 the party will swap out, and then Yuna will summon in the Aeon or whatever to fight for you.
It felt like a real nice mix of like 8, 10, and 15. Like it was like a nice mix.
Yeah, it was just nice like having an extra ally for a little while.
Yeah. It's kind of like...
Yeah, and like specifically, like as far as I could tell, like enemies didn't ever target the summons.
No, they don't get hurt or anything like that.
Yeah, which is kind of weird and kind of convenient, because like you just, you know, use your ATB gauge to say, hey, Ifrit, why don't you just burn all these dudes? And then he does, and it's cool as hell.
Except the enemy moves, and then it's just pointless because he just puts a big fire in the middle of the room.
Happens so often. Yeah.
Oh man, yeah. My biggest frustration with the combat is that getting an attack and an ability interrupted, especially if you're casting a spell, both takes your ATB gauge and your MP. Like
it
that's
sucks.
So frustrating.
Yeah.
Oh, try it in hard mode because that MP ain't coming back anytime soon.
Yeah,
because
then the MP doesn't come back. Yeah.
That's my biggest frustration. But yeah.
So, what, around chapter 4 is where the biggest story inserts start to happen, right?
Yes, this is all completely new.
Yeah, because you get the whole thing with like going to Jesse's house that wasn't in the game.
Yeah, it helps to really flesh out the members of Avalanche, and you get to do a motorcycle chase.
And you don't get Jesse's mom's pizza, which is they say pizza a lot in this game.
They sure do.
Which I think we talked about on the last podcast, but boy, it's a lot in this game.
Yes.
So what did you guys think of the bike ride and all that stuff?
I did really bad at it, but I thought it was super fun. I didn't get the kiss from Jesse or the compliment or whatever you get from her there.
Neither did I but, you know, story of my freaking life, bro.
Yeah, I know, bro. Like, I was trying to get that smooch from Jesse.
I'm not sure if I did or not.
You would have gotten an achievement if you did.
Bro, you would know if you did, okay?
You would know if you got the smooch.
Your heart
Jesse,
would be going doki doki.
don't make his choice between Tifa and her even harder. God damn it. Don't you?
I don't know.
Save that to the end.
I was, I don't know. I did kind of like Jesse. She was pretty cool in this.
Yeah,
Jesse's great. I think it's hilarious how horny she is for Cloud.
And also that she's just kind of completely messing with him, or maybe not, or maybe she
or
is.
Or maybe not,
it's,
yeah. Hard
it's
to,
great.
Hard to say.
It's fun. Obviously, she kind of like takes center stage as far as the members of Avalanche go, but we get a lot more from Biggs and Wedge, which is great, because all of these characters are like, what, they have like 4 lines of dialogue in the original? And now we're getting these huge scenes with all of them, and it grounded them all, and I liked hanging out with them. It felt very slow paced. It kind of reminded me of like episodes of an anime where like the shonen hero, he's not gonna fight Vegeta today, he's just like gonna go hang out with Bulma and whatever, and they're gonna eat pizza, you know, like, it just, it felt like that slower paced character driven side of it, but at the same time you're literally doing motorcycle chases and fighting a new soldier.
Yeah, I found it weird that Roach didn't come back in the game at all. Like, it felt like he was going to be chasing you through.
Expected a big payoff from that.
Very strange. He shows up for like 5 seconds later in the game, and that's it.
Now, I'm sure we'll see him in sequels, but like, what? I absolutely expected there to be payoff. I didn't know if he was going to either help the characters in some way, because he was willing to attack Shinra's soldiers to get what he wanted, which was a fight with Cloud. I didn't know if he was going to pull up some stunt like that and actually save them at one point, but then you have to fight him, or what it was going to be, but we got nothing.
See, I thought he would be a reoccurring guy.
Yeah.
Like, at the worst times, he'd just pop in and go, ha-ha! I've caught up with you.
My heart is thrilling for battle, or whatever.
jokey. He says.
You've just done in a big boss, and you're like, Christ, oof, need 5 minutes, boys. And then he just turns up and goes, ha ha! And you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, he's down in the sewer revving his engine. How'd you get down here?
you finally kill the Sahagin Prince.
Yeah.
There he is, waiting in the chest.
I take it he's the first new, in brackets, character then that we've witnessed in real time.
Yep.
Well, except that we haven't talked about Johnny. There's like side characters, but yeah, this is a first enemy character.
Oh, sure, but...
Marl the landlady.
She's awesome.
Do you think that they made Marl the landlady just so like there would be a reason for Marlene to be named Marlene?
Yeah, I don't know, man.
It's really weird.
I was trying to remember if she was in the original game, and I was like, no, I'm thinking of Marlene. And then I met Marlene a second later. I was like, yeah, it's just the same name.
Marlene is Barrett's child, like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, Roche is, like, the first, I think, major introduction, right?
Again, we like jumping the gun. It's getting to the point we're going to be jumping the shark.
I'm so excited, sorry.
No, not you. I'm talking about what I'm going to say. It's like, I thought Roach was going to be kind of the Sephiroth stand-in, because I know Sephiroth had appeared, but even now thinking about it, it doesn't make sense. That's my biggest, I liked the ending, but I didn't really like that Sephiroth was so forefront to it. Thinking about Roach, he should have been that Sephiroth stand-in, the temporary stand-in, until later editions of 7.
Nah, you'd rather Sephiroth was like the entity in the shadows
and gets pushed back, because that's what it is in the original game. Is Sephiroth,
right? You pursue this man in black for, you know, 80 hours. Discs worth of the game until eventually that would have been interesting, you know, a fun twist to find that Roche has one of those Genova tattoos or whatever they were, one of those numbers, something like that, where you think you have a big face off with Sephiroth, but really it was just his using his proxy, or who knows, maybe it would have gotten even more confusing if they'd done it.
Well, just all the fact that he's...
Do you think he could come back now as a good guy in the next chapter and join you?
That would be very interesting, actually.
Because that's what I was thinking. If they're not going to use him as a recurring bad guy, or is he going to be once every chapter he turns up in, like, his bike, then a helicopter?
Just some random dude will show up every game, like, in one chapter.
It just sort of reminds us that there are other people with the Soldier First Class rank, right? But we didn't really need that. I mean, I believed there were others.
You're fighting him now. See, he's there in front of you.
I hope that there is payoff.
That is the only other like first class soldier that you run into, right?
Yes. Yeah, as far as I know.
And the fact is, we're still early days in the game, so we're not even that strong. So he's not even that good.
Or is he going to get Zane spin-off?
No, I don't think so.
And they're going to do some total media tertiary thing.
Oh, right, yeah. Maybe.
He's like
a dirge of Rocherous.
Yeah. Or like an anime or a manga.
They've done all that stuff, you know. There was the Final Fantasy 15 anime. There's, you know, the novels, all that stuff. There's two Final Fantasy 7 novels. One of them is about some orphans in the Turks. And I know one of those orphan girls shows up as the thief character in this game, Kyrie or something like that. But I haven't read that novel. I read the other one, the On the Way to a Smile or something like that. It's about Advent Children and how depressed everyone is. but they're pulling from all properties for this one. They want to pull the expanded Final Fantasy VII universe into this one.
That's right.
Yeah, and I'm happy with that. So yeah, just I would like to see a bit more of Roach. Well, at the same time, he is a very generic character. Like, there's nothing that unique to him. He's got long, flowing hair.
I mean, he's pretty flamboyant. I thought his like.
So's everyone else like in Final Fantasy.
Dramatic fucking like talking about like how his heart burns for battle or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like that was fun. I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
For the screen time, he seemed entertaining enough. You know what I mean? Like I say. There's only so much you can do, but you can hand the fight. The bit with the bike's pretty cool. It's like, oh, it's visually cool. It's gravity defying, and I don't like the laws of physics don't apply in this world. But anyway, it's cool what you can do.
It's what Mako
get that Mako infusion.
Yeah,
that's right.
Get all the super soldier serum. So is this
with the Hulk?
Around these chapters? Is this when you invade the next reactor?
Chapter 4 is where you steal the Jesse's stealing the explosives.
That's right.
And
that's
then
right.
So is it dogged pursuit is heading towards the next reactor. That's the train chapter. That's it's quite a
there's,
short.
There's
chapter.
A lot of
oh right the train.
Yeah, the train. You know, the good character moments. Good world interaction with Barrett with a giant machine gun on his arm, just screaming at people, being like,
"I don't know, Evelyn, it's just so bad."
Middle manager.
Yeah. Well, see, like, Barrett, please lower your voice, bro. You have a gun for a hand. You're making everybody nervous.
I do find it quite amusing, like, and Cloud, like, has a 6-foot sword on his back, and, like, no one's worried
like,
about
who
it.
Who let him on the train?
Just a really weird group of cosplayers.
Yeah. I liked all the character interactions here, but everything leading into the second reactor, well, I liked all this stuff. I guess it was when we got inside the reactor, which might be the next chapter. I could be skipping ahead, but that first dungeon, I was really happy that we had a dungeon, but I didn't really like doing it.
Is that the...
We had to move all the cranes and the elevators and power and stuff on or whatever. It was fine. And like I said, I was kind of glad there was something like that there, but I found that I didn't super enjoy doing it.
I don't know. I kind of agree. It's not so fun going through a second time because there's no real point to it. It is a little bit filler-ish. That's the chapter light the way. It's chapter 6.
Where you have to turn off the three suns or whatever.
It's
fine. It's world building. It just felt like it really slowed things down at a time where I was ready for them to keep going forward and going forward. When they slowed things down, I wanted them to slow it down with character moments, which is generally what they did, and then pick back up with the gameplay and get the ball rolling again. So when they slow things down with a lamp simulator, I was less excited.
But yeah, maybe it was a cool, like, it's a really cool environment, which I think helped a lot, but...
Although the ground box, you know, like the skyboxes you see in video games, they said the ground box because you're above it. I didn't think it looked that good. Like, that was like probably the worst looking graphics in the game. It looked a little flat for me.
Don't know, there were a few dodgy textures at some points on the walls, I noticed.
Yeah, that's just Unreal Engine shit. Like,
but it's really annoying takes you to it. When you see it, it's just like, you've ruined it. The immersion's gone.
Unreal Engine has a really hard time prioritizing which textures to load in sometimes.
At least there was no texture bottom. Yeah, that's the cardinal sin.
Yeah.
At least Final Fantasy VII looks okay in the Unreal Engine, because they put Kingdom Hearts 3 in it, and that always seemed really weird looking to me. Like, Donald Duck in the Unreal Engine just didn't seem right. But visually, I mean, obviously, apart
just Donald,
from...
Just Donald, what? Goofy was fine. Goofy, you're fine.
Yeah, Goofy, I can handle Goofy. Donald, not so much, brother. stop right there, pal. But, no, I mean, overall, despite the, sometimes the still JPEG image background, it did look nice for the most part. But, yeah, it kind of glares out at you at some points.
Yeah. Yeah, I think chapter 6 is definitely a filler chapter. It could have been combined into one, but it felt like with chapter 5 was very short. It could have been one chapter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they should have just let us, instead of figuring out how to turn off lights, they should have just let us learn how to like get our license. That would have been better filler.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Goku and Piccolo and Cloud going to get their driver's license.
That's right.
I think that they're trying to avoid some of that. It's too linear stuff that, you know, Final Fantasy 13 was harped on for. So I feel like this was a necessity, or something like this was a necessity. I'm just not sure that they nailed it. All of the combat, it's like the same enemies. You have to use like the same techniques on them every single time to kind of get through quickly. And again, while I was playing
is this the first time you run into those little floating fuckers?
Yeah, I mean, it might be.
With like the one eyeball, the mono drives or whatever.
They're not fun.
Those are real, real like, okay, fuckers, especially the Mark IIs. Once you start fighting the Mark IIs.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
This section definitely just slowed things down, and it wasn't really until I got to the end of the section that I thought, man, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
So it's not like it was terrible, but it was certainly not great.
Yeah, it was definitely not one of those things where I was annoyed with it in the moment, but after it was over, I was like, oh, I'm glad that's over. I'm glad I'm not doing that anymore.
Yeah, I think that it was good they added in like the visual puzzles where you had to work out how to get to the materia, because they were like they were signposts where you're like, oh, I want to get that. I think that helped.
Yeah, like when you spy that summon materia up in the fans.
Yeah, I was like, well, this is going to consume me now. I have to get that.
I spent the whole time going through there being like, okay, what can I give me that fucking materia?
Yep. But yeah, definitely a filler chapter. As I said, I think as a little bit world building, it kind of illustrates the damage. It's there to kind of paint the picture how bad Shinra are. Like, they are pumping smog. They're not only covering up the slums, they're pumping their waste onto the slums.
Yeah.
And
that's some real supervillain shit.
And they're like, hey, look, we're so good, we gave you sunlight with a giant light bulb.
Yeah.
Aye, aye, aye.
So I think I like those elements, that it's really painting the picture.
Yeah. We get to demonize Shinra a lot more, which is good. I mean, and that even leads into the next section when suddenly Avalanche is being put on TV, their faces are on camera, and they're being labeled as terrorists, and they're saying that they're allying with Wutai, who's the enemy of Midgar and all this stuff, and you know, they're really getting they're being gaslit. Everybody's being gaslit here.
Yep.
A lot of Wutai references in this.
A lot
game,
of Wutai propaganda, but we don't see Yuffie, and we don't see anything of Wutai, which is interesting. So is this where you fight Airbuster around here?
It's the end of the reactor.
So this is the next 7. Reactor. Biggs helps you get in by giving you grapple hooks.
Oh yeah.
Hell yeah. Love to get those grapple guns.
Mm-hmm, yep. Mm-hmm. And then you
I thought we were gonna get to use them in gameplay and not just in cutscenes, but it's okay.
Yeah. I mean,
we kind of do.
I was hoping the whole time, and they finally let you in like chapter 6, like 14, 15 or something, and it's like too late, guys, too late.
Yeah, it's basically just like a ladder at that point.
Yeah. But that Airbuster was a hard fight, man.
Yeah, that's the first time I got game over was fighting Airbuster.
Really? Okay.
And I had to switch over to Barret for a good majority of the fight because I couldn't seem to get out of the way in time of some of the blasts. And the AI wasn't doing much to get out of the way either. So I just ended up playing as Barret and like hanging super far back and firing away. And using spells and healing Cloud and Tifa the whole time, and that's how I got through it.
Nice. I put the elemental attack materia on Tifa with some lightning materia and just fucking went to town on it, and it did pretty well.
Nice. What did you get rid of? Because they give you the options to like disarm it. Was that in the original? It's one of those things that I can't remember now. It's hard to tell.
It feels like something from an old Final Fantasy. I was kind of choosing at random.
Exactly what I got rid of. I think I got mostly got rid of is like AI cores or whatever to make it slower.
What the hell I was doing? It was like, well, whatever computer I get you first, sure.
Yeah, I got rid of the things to make it. I made it slower because I was like, well, even if it hits hard, if it's slow, I can get out of the way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was my thought process.
The big bombs, the bad. I just did a mixture my first time, but on hard mode, it's very hard. I did.
Yeah.
I got rid of the big bombs because they almost one shot you. If not, and so I got rid of the big bombs completely and didn't care about the magic stuff, the items,
mm-hmm.
and it made it a lot easier, even on hard mode. I think I did it my first go.
That's good,
but it was a touch and go fight though. Yeah. So before that,
so you defeat the Airbuster and then you fall down into the slums.
No, I got to ask the question. The door opening. It was in the original, so I'm glad they put it in. Where you got to do the timing? Do you remember it from the original? We had
a
triangle or something at the right time. Did you?
Yeah.
Did you guys have a hard time with it? Or was it just me?
No, it was just like, I think I was like, got it on like the second or third try.
Yeah, I think that's how I was too. I failed at least once, I know that.
Yeah, I had, well, the main one was fine, because this was once. It was the one, the bonus door, where you didn't have to go through to get the items that you took off the Airbuster.
Oh yeah, where you had to do like the handles and move the handles.
Yeah. And there was four of them, and they were more complicated. On my first playthrough, it took like 15 attempts. I just couldn't do it.
Yeah, oh, man. Well, that was me trying to figure out how to do the pull-up minigame later on.
Boy.
I just, my brain couldn't function that way. It just doesn't do it.
I found out that that's a trophy.
I did get it eventually, but boy.
Yeah.
That's a trophy to do all three. I just didn't bother. I will have to go back and do it.
I got the trophy.
Oh, no, man. That's painful.
It hurt my brain, yeah. But yeah, now down to the Sector 7, or whatever, Sector 5? Is that where we're going?
Yes.
Where does Cloud fall?
Sector 5.
Sector 5, iconic scene, falling through the church, landing in the flower bed. Yeah, it's hard not to get hit with the nostalgia here.
Yeah, for sure. This was, like, a big, big one for me. Like holy shit, like, this, just this... Again, it's like it's something about like seeing it in this level of detail, mm-hmm. like these things that I have nostalgia for. Like, but like, boy, like seeing Aerith and Cloud like having their first real meeting and like the escape and like getting away through the rooftops and like having all these conversations together. Like, man, let me do that for a whole game.
Yeah, it feels good. I mean, even on the PS1, the polygonal. Big-handed Cloud laying in the flower bed, like it looks like crap, but it's aesthetically pleasing because it's a well-designed environment, and seeing that come to life the way that it did in this remake is like stunning.
Yeah, for sure. And so, it's interesting, they brought the wisps, they're the ones, because it never made sense they fell that far and lived, but they kind of made the wisps save him.
I mean, it makes more sense than him just, like, living because he landed on some flowers.
Well, listen, they're magical flowers.
Those are super soft flowers.
Yeah, super soft flowers. He's got that Mako blood. You know, he's all right.
The roof took some of the impact.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, the wisps kind of guided him down. So they wanted him to meet here.
Yeah, I mean, because that's what happens in the original game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then very quickly we get into a fun boss fight.
We get to meet Reno for the first time.
Yeah, meet the iconic Turk.
Reno. Like I personally
feel that Rude is better than Reno. I've always felt that way. Reno obviously has cool red hair or whatever, but I'm a Rude man myself. Just want to put that out there.
Rude.
That's you heard it here first. Chris is a Rude man.
Yeah, Rude boy.
Rude boy Chris.
But, this boss fight's fun. I don't even really remember it that much. I just know that the imagery of it, I guess, the one-on-one in the church, I really like the setup of the fight.
How bad did you feel?
Any of the, like, one-on-one duels against another guy were super, super fun in this game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, generally they were fun. Did you feel, like, real bad for, like, getting on the flowers, fighting on the flowers? Because Eris would be like, hey,
I did feel a little bit.
I tried to stay off the flowers.
Yes, like, real hard. At first, I thought this fight was a fight that you like had to lose because it just seemed so hard when you first. He just seemed to be on your case, and it was real hard to like work out how to dodge and how to defend. But then you kind of get into the groove,
bro. You just gotta go into Punisher mode, bro.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
That's
right,
sweet.
There's always. It feels like actually a lot of these one-on-one fights have specific strategies that you need to kind of follow if you want to be successful. One of my friends was texting me during his Rufus fight later on in the game. He was just like, yeah, I really loved the game except for that Rufus fight. It took him nights or not nights, but hours on the final night of him playing it. So it was just, you know, a huge bummer for him. But I guess I figured out the technique on my first attempt and I beat him in, you know, 40 seconds and it was over. But it just goes to show that, you know, depending on what kind of strategy you normally use versus these, you know, normal enemies, I guess, when you get to certain bosses, you may either really struggle where somebody else is easily able to get through or, you know, vice versa. That's kind of what makes this battle system interesting.
Yes. Yep. But no, it was a cool fight. How annoyed were you guys about that yellow materia? I felt like I missed something and I was real annoyed.
Oh, yeah.
I kept thinking about it, and like every, when I finally got to go back to the church, I was so happy.
Mm-hmm. And it's just mm-hmm. a dumb chakra.
Yep.
You're like, wow, great, thanks. This is where I
Because they show it to you in a cutscene, don't they?
Yeah.
Because they show it to you like when the like the Shinra folks like break through the door, and you just see it in the door behind them, and you're like, fuck.
Yeah. Dude, come on. I really liked all this stuff, but as I got further into this chapter, I found I didn't want to do any side quests, and I did a few of them, but I
and
lamented
to you.
And
that's why you beat you on Aerith's dress.
Yeah, she looked like she was going to a middle school dance. I felt so bad.
Fucked up, man.
I regretted not doing all of the side quests here.
I did all the side quests, so I'd get that good-ass dress.
I didn't really enjoy the setup of this location. I felt like I was always going in the wrong direction between the sectors or whatever.
It's very confusing.
So at a certain point, I was like, all right, forget it. Going back to Aerith's house.
I did find it confusing where you're going.
You rumble with Rude, too, here, right?
Yeah, man, that's the worst fight.
In this chapter.
Yeah, Rude is tough. Like, that was a hard fight for me.
You can't use Aerith at all. Like, if you switch to her, he instantly counters her. Like, he has an ability to basically just grab her staff and say nope. And so it's really hard.
Yeah. I never really liked playing as Aerith anyway. It feels like everybody else's, like, normal attacks and triangle moves feel very tactile, and it feels like you're getting a good response out of him, but I could never get a sense of what I was doing when I played as Aerith. Again, I don't think I had much trouble with Rude, but he has weird, specific, like, idiosyncrasies. I know later on, he still won't attack Tifa. Even in the cutscenes, he won't attack Tifa because he has a crush on her. But the same, I guess, doesn't really apply to Aerith in this battle. Although he's not supposed to kill her, so maybe he's not too bad. I don't know. I don't really remember this fight too well.
Well, I've just done it on hard mode, and boy, was it not fun.
Oh, yeah. I'm not looking forward to that.
Yeah, because he can counter everything she does. So from from quite a distance away, it's an instant grab. There's no dodge. It's basically like a...
So you pretty much just have to play as Cloud the whole time?
Yeah, and that's the thing. And he has an annoying ability where he does the sleep powder that traces you and then does a jump attack at the just after it, and
oh my god,
so you either get hit by that and then get put to sleep, or you dodge that and then get put to sleep. And so it's quite a frustrating fight. Actually, speaking of that, since I'm thinking about Aerith weapons, what do you guys think about the leveling up of the weapons?
I always like that in games. Some of the Tales of games use that. And what's it called? Final Fantasy IX uses the abilities on the weapons. So I liked that whole aspect of it. When it comes to like actually using like AP to upgrade your weapons, I was paralyzed by choice a little bit there. I know that the Buster Sword can be, you know, viable throughout the entire game. So I never really knew which weapon I wanted to use because they have variable skills or whatever. But overall, I like that as kind of an upgrade system.
Yeah,
It was cool to have an upgrade system, but I don't know. Like I more or less just like kind of set people to just automatically upgrade.
Yeah,
because I didn't care that much.
Yeah, probably should have done that. So once you get to the max level, you start getting more of the texts in the hard mode, like the books that give you mm-hmm. free SP AP. What is it? SP.
I don't know. AP. Yeah, it might be SP, AP. Who cares? Yeah. Points.
The
points.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah, so you start getting the books, and that's when you the reward in hard mode. I don't know if you guys know this or not. I don't know how much you've
looked at. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's heaps of them to get, and that's basically what you're doing in hard mode. You get extra levels, and they all weapons become 6 materia slot, and so they become less different. But they all have their main focus, which is more distinct once you get to that level 6.
Cool.
Okay,
cool.
Yeah, sure.
And so you'll have your magic sword is very magic and so on. But what I don't understand is why Aerith has physical attack at all, because her normal attack is a magic attack.
Yeah.
So I find it weird that any of hers have physical attack stats.
I guess because the stat has to be there for some reason. Yeah, I don't know. That's weird.
But like the bladed spear staff actually has a larger, reasonable amount of physical attack, but she never actually hits things with it.
Oh, yeah. She okay. That's what I was gonna ask, because like Barrett has his his melee attack attachments.
Yeah, the bowling ball.
You do actually physically attack.
Yeah, he does. He runs up and punches things, which again is annoying that two of his stronger ones are close range. It kind of pisses me off.
Yep.
And especially they give them to you, and then they give you enemies that you need his long range for. So yay for that. Which you still can do with his abilities, but that kind of bugged me. So all in all, I think the weapons, there is a good selection, but there is also, it seems limited. Like Tifa, it's like Iron Knuckles because that does heaps of punching damage. And Cloud, the Buster Sword, is just a great all-rounder. So I've gone back to the Buster Sword.
Plus it looks good in cutscenes.
Yeah.
That makes folk want to make swords, doesn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the budding bodyguard chapter is with Aerith. The side quest is just more of what happened in the first one. I didn't know that's what decided what dress she wore. I thought it was what you said in next chapter. And so I went and did hard mode, and redid all the side quests and got the same dress, and I was really annoyed.
So you just got the same dress.
And I was like, what the heck am I doing wrong? I chose a different option. And then I realized... Because that's how it is for Tifa. You choose which dress by commenting.
I didn't even realize that until Brian told me.
Whereas Aerith, I thought it was the same because you get asked a very similar question. And so I thought it was the same. But no, it's how many side quests you do.
Yeah, the Aerith thing, when the thing you say to her in Walmart determines the Chapter 14 cutscene, like who visits you in that cutscene.
Oh.
I mean, among other things.
Yeah,
but
there's
like,
a few options for that.
So that cutscene in Chapter 14, you can either talk to Tifa, Aerith, or Barret.
Yes, it's the same as Golden Saucer date.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I hope I've done that right.
Yeah.
I've watched all of those cutscenes, and I'm glad that I got the Aerith one.
Oh, you got Aerith? I got Tifa.
Yes.
It's one of the big key things is who
I'm a good boyfriend, what can I say?
Tifa's Cloud's boyfriend. Girlfriend.
Tifa is Cloud's boyfriend, you're
right. Yeah, that's right. We gotta ship Aerith and Zack, man. There's no other way.
The devastating thing about the Aerith one is that that's where the you can't fall, no matter what, you can't fall in love with me thing comes from.
Oh.
And that's so, like, that hurts. It's very heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't even realize, like, that was an optional thing until... I mean, I think I had seen something about it, but I really didn't... Never crossed my mind. I just thought it was a scene between Cloud and Tifa, to be honest.
Yeah.
So the town...
Yeah, so... Chapter 9, right?
Yeah.
Do you guys have any highlights out of those side quests before we move on?
I don't remember any of them. You fight a Tonberry at some point? Is that here or is that later?
That's later on.
It's just it's in the location, but yeah, later.
Yeah. You do get to, like, this is where you meet all the kids, all the adorable kids with their wooden swords.
Yeah, yeah.
My inspiration.
And you meet the one kid that's dressed up like a Moogle and it's weird as fuck.
Yeah. Just the side quests, there's like two amazing in them.
Yeah.
I do like the Angel of the Slums kind of character throughout the story. I think that's kind of a fun
Yeah,
little
this
thing.
Is where you meet her for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
Although you're
not
supposed to know it's her, although I thought it was extremely fucking obvious.
So it's just the old lady, right?
Like to the point where when you actually find out who it is, like, Cloud and Tifa are, like, stunned. They're like, oh, you're the Angel of the Slums? It's like, where the fuck have you been?
Yeah, guys, wake up. Stop staring at each other for 2 seconds and we'll figure out what's going on.
No, yeah. See, this is the War Market chapter, the next one. The town that never sleeps.
Yes.
Tifa's motivations in the original make sense. Because it's like, oh, you haven't seen her in a little while. And like, oh, she went to like go do this like undercover mission, right? But it just feels like the stakes are so high in the remake. Everybody is so realistic looking. So just the idea that she's like, oh, I'm going to go into this this man's creepy sex dungeon.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm going to give myself up as a sex slave.
It felt very weird. It's like, also, y'all were just, like, put on TV. Like, the reactor was destroyed. Like, there's a lot going on.
And finding everyone knows out, who she is.
Yeah, like, finding out why this dude was looking for Avalanche just doesn't seem like it's worth risking. And I understand that they're just following the story beats from the original. But this time, when we see her rolling along in the back of that Chocobo carriage, I was like, Tifa, what are you doing? Go home.
Yeah, I thought this bit was a bit weird. I was like, can we just kick the door down?
Well, exactly. Especially how tough everyone is. Like, you guys are pretty badass. Like, you could just really, really just storm the castle.
We've got a sword and a man with a hand cannon. Fucking kick the door down.
Yeah, and you've got some arbiters of fate, like, protecting you.
Yeah, man.
Instead, it just kind of, yeah, this is where I kind of disconnected for a bit with it and just went through the numbers on it. It did nothing for me. I get the point, but I'm always like, I want to be shooting things and stabbing things. Okay.
What's it? Because I really liked Walmart. I thought it was a super fun area.
The recreation of it and that whole area, the town of it, is great. Like, it looks great. I just don't like it because of some of the things that you have to do. I didn't like that the decision on what dress you wear is based on. It's based on just
isn't
like
how well you do in the dance.
No.
Yeah, you have to do a bunch of this much of criteria that I didn't really fully understand.
It's not the dance at all. I thought it was, but it's
oh, you have to have a certain materia leveled up to a certain level when you do certain side quests.
That's not even it either.
What?
Sorry, I'm looking it up. I'm not because now I'm
it's curious. Literally how you answer Sam with the flip of the coin.
Oh really?
So if you
because he has three different dresses.
Yep. So if you answer heads or tails, it's the kind of purple black dress with pigtails, like saloon looking dress. I think it is. Mm-hmm. Because you get Sam's side quests then if you do that option. So after the battle arena, you come out and Lady M, Madam M, whatever her name is, tells you, "Oh, Sam's got some quests for you," and those are the quests that are. Like the original game, but like Chris, you said, it's based on how well you do is based on the materia you have. And all that does, your higher level materia and how you do in those things gives you just more rewards, more items as a reward.
Okay.
If you choose no deal, and then you go to the battle arena after you go see Madam M to get Aerith dressed up, She gives you side quests to do.
Okay.
And so so you do those side quests, that determines one of the other dresses, which is like a pretty frilly pink one. And I believe the third one is that you choose heads or tails, and then you just don't do any of the side quests for Sam. Like, you don't go help the dressmaker or whatever. You don't do any of that. You just go back and try the main quest, and then you get the worst dress.
Yeah, okay, so I'm reading on here that to get the black dress, you complete a Chapter 9 side quest, but you don't finish either set. And then for the blue and black dress, you complete Chocobo Sam's side quests, and for the white and purple dress, you complete Madam M's side quests.
Yeah, and it's all determined on that
that's crazy.
Flip of the coin.
I felt really bad because everyone was just making fun of Aerith in my game because she didn't have a nice dress.
Aerith looked hot as fuck.
People on the streets were like, "Man, that dress looks super cheap," and I was like, "Shut up! I worked really hard. I didn't know that I was going to screw this up."
And to me, I thought it was based on the hand massage.
Yeah.
Well, apparently the hand massage has some effect on which of the side quests you get, whether you get Chocobo Sam's or Madam M's.
Oh, because they're both.
So if you buy the super cheap one, then you get Chocobo Sam's side quests.
Well, see, I bought the expensive one because I figured it would have something to do with how good dress you were, and I just wish I had more control over it, like you did in the original, where you could try and do the best. And it was clear.
Well, it looks like you do have control over it. It's just in a different way, right?
It is more arbitrary. Like, I did it on hard mode. I chose something different, thinking I'd get a different outcome, and I didn't. And so I had to redo it on hard mode because both branching quests have different books. So you have to do both. Do it twice on hard mode. It wouldn't be so bad if you started at the freaking market, like war market, but you go through like that underground tunnel,
the ruins,
which is just time consuming. So I've got all the books.
This is where you see the cat. Isn't this where you see a cat slide too for the first time? And you get to fucking slide on the cat slide. So good.
Oh, a cat slide. Yeah.
I freaked out. I legitimately freaked out when I slid on the cat slide.
I was like, how did he not cut his leg off with a Buster Sword? But yeah, so War Market kind of just pissed me off. And the squats, I don't know. Like, I'm glad it's there because the squats are hilarious in the original, but I'm not sure if I like.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that the squats, like, were super easy, I thought, but then later on, doing the pull-ups, like,
the pull-ups
breaks
suck.
Your brain in a different way, and oh, boy.
I don't do it. I'm going to have to go do it now. So I've got managed to get two dresses for Cloud, two dresses for Tifa, and I've got one for Aerith. I've got to go back and do the Aerith ones, but I can do those on easy mode now. The dance is what really... I can't stand that dance. The dance.
Oh, seriously?
Minigame.
I fucking love it.
I hate it. And having to redo it multiple times has pissed me off so bad. It's funny, and I'd rather just sit back and watch it, or have it more of a... It's just the HUD for it. You can't see them coming. There's flashes. I'm getting epilepsy during it. I can't... It's just so frustrating. I can't do it. It pisses me off so bad. It makes you so angry.
Yeah. I can understand not liking like the gameplay of it, but man, fucking...
It's hilarious.
Give me a whole game of Andrea Rodea. Like, that guy fucking rules.
I absolutely could not in any way, shape, or form perform when it came to Cloud being on stage. The practice one, I did it perfect on my first try, and I said, you know what, we're going to do a second try just to be sure. And I did it perfect on the second try, too. Then I got up on stage, and I absolutely humiliated myself.
Same. Like, all right, I can do this. But then the actual dance, they hide them behind the characters. They'll show you the image, and then it'll flick away. I'm like, where's it gone? Where's it gone? And then it flicks back, and then...
Oh man!
Yeah, and then as it flicks back is when the beam is going through.
Yeah,
I can't be on this, you know, DDR Extreme Revolution stuff. You know, I'm just a simple gamer, man.
Yeah, give me some accessibility options
and my gun.
On the band square.
I
kick the door in.
I would have preferred it if it was like have the dance, but have the actual prompts more like Dance Revolution, more prominent on the screen.
Yeah,
yeah,
but. Yeah. See, I thought that
I'm sorry,
was...
Stuart, we cut you off like three times. What were you trying to say?
Who? Me? No.
No, Stuart.
Oh, Stuart.
Nah, I was just reimagining the... I've got a big sword and I've got a gun. Just want my...
Well, see...
I get it.
And
yeah.
My first time...
I get the point of this section. I get the whole point that it's the staging thing and it's... You know what I mean? It's a bit of fun, guys. You know what I mean? Do it for the guys. Enjoy yourself. Hey, it's good. Hey, good times. But no... Just no.
But yeah.
So
it could have been earned on way in 10 minutes. What, you know what I mean?
Okay, so let's get to Don Corneo. Gets, you know, super horny for all three of you. Who did he choose?
It's Cloud. He always chooses Cloud, doesn't he?
Yeah. Does he always choose Cloud?
Yeah,
I think it's scripted for him, and within that, an eternity of cosplayers are born.
Yeah. Did we talk about fighting the giant house yet?
Oh, fuck the giant house, bro.
Wow.
Trident hard mode.
It's weird.
Yeah, fuck the hell house.
Well, I've had to do it several times in hard mode as well, having to do different options, and it's a hard fight.
You chose to do it in hard mode.
Oh,
don't
my
bring
God.
Your sympathy. You're getting no sympathy from this.
So, all right. So, I think I had been reading online about how the game is, like, fair up until Chapter 9. Now this makes sense, because I'd heard people complaining about a certain boss, but I didn't know for sure if it was the Hell House or not. I assume this is the one that everyone hates.
Yeah, the Hell House sucks ass,
okay.
So I get it.
All right. I don't think I had trouble with it. I had trouble on all the bosses that nobody else seemed to have any trouble with.
It's just like Dark Souls.
Yeah.
I mean, my issue with the Hell House was that, like, it just takes so long. It's so fucking tanky.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, like, it seemed impossible to, like, figure out, like, how to
pick
some of its patterns.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a one-hit thing.
Well, it's also the way you actually build its stagger gauge is using the spells that are opposite, which makes sense, but they literally give you a 3-second window and the spells take 5 seconds to cast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the part that really bugs me, and so it's chip damage for most of the fight.
The God House mode was the thing that like had me like fucking screaming on the sofa at like 11 p.m. as I was fighting the Hell House.
Because it's
getting real mad.
It chucks up that shield as well, the impenetrable shield. And,
yes. Yep.
Well, guess what? In hard mode, he does out Tonberries.
No. God.
And so,
what a nightmare.
First time that happened, before I even realized, Aerith gets stabbed and she's dead. And I didn't have Rays on Cloud. And so, yeah, so once you realize they're actually not, they're kind of weak, so you can kind of deal with them with a triple slash. But then the next time, after dying a few times, instead of two, he throws out three. He threw out three, which made Cloud get died. And then in the last phase where he goes real nuts, the house, I'm calling him a boy because it's, I don't know why, but it.
Because he's got a chimney.
Yeah.
He's got a wee tail. Two robots pop out. Where the gates open up in the original, and it gives you, in the original fight, and there's some boxes. You can get some resources back while you're fighting.
Oh, yeah.
In those rooms, there are...
Instead it's robots?
There's the spinner and the shooty one. The shooty and the blade one.
Man. Oh, jeez. Oh, man.
So it's a fun fight.
Like a real nightmare.
It's a fun fight.
And then
fight.
You go from there into the sewers.
Yep. And I helped up Aerith. I don't know about y'all.
I guess I helped up Tifa.
Tifa.
Y'all must have helped up Tifa.
Tifa is Cloud's boyfriend. We established this already.
Listen, Tifa is a tough lady who can fight for herself.
That's like, you have a
Aerith
point.
Is too, but Aerith is...
She's an ancient, bro.
Yeah, but Cloud doesn't know that at this point.
Yeah, that's true. The sewer... I died a lot in the sewers. Those stinky boys, they really did a number on me. But I think this is probably where I struggle the most. Not on any bosses, just random encounters.
Just
I would always have characters. I get turned
into
a frog a lot, and it's very funny, but it's very annoying.
I'll tell you what, the frog mode in this is fantastic. It looks so good. You got a little Buster Sword on your back. And
yeah.
It is pretty great.
Always with the sword.
Always comes back to the sword.
And you still have abilities.
Yeah.
It's so good. I just liked fighting as a frog for a while.
It is funny. And this is where they start to establish a better relationship between Aerith and Tifa. They basically never interact in the original game. But to be fair, basically everyone interacts with Cloud and nobody else in the original game because it's a PS1 game. So it's nice to see them kind of form a friendship throughout this.
Yeah, it's very good and cute.
It is good. I like it. But there is a little bit of kind of like, who's this girl? Kind of from Tifa.
Yeah. 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 My boyfriend just showed up with some other girl. Like, I'm his boyfriend. Stop. In this universe, for some reason, Tifa hasn't learned the word girlfriend. So she just keeps saying boyfriend.
Chris, stop mocking me.
Sorry. You run through sewer water, these massive sticky sewers underneath Midgar, and then you go fight some haunted trains.
Well,
the haunted trains were super fucking cool. Like that area, maybe the best atmosphere in the entire game.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people have definitely heard them say this is the filler. This is the biggest part, but it was so cool to kind of do a horror themed. Adventure in Final Fantasy.
Well, I believe the lore is there from the original. Like they talk that the train graveyard is talked in that way. I believe at some point because it felt familiar, but it was fleshed out.
Yeah, all that like the urban legend about I think like people going missing there. It is all mentioned before, and they talk about how it's haunted. In the original, I always expected that to like be a thing, but I don't know if it ever really.
Well,
is.
There were. That's where you fought ghosts. It was cool. And that's where you fought the.
Yeah.
Oh, about the haunted house. What I did like about it in the fight scene, it's completely wacky. Mm-hmm. It doesn't actually fit in with the world that this more real world. I just love that it's an enemy from the original game.
Yeah.
And they kind of made it make a little bit sense, even though it's completely mental. And I like that they did.
I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I like that they did that with a few bosses. They took normal enemies and created them into an area boss. and like leveled them up. And they did that with the Haunt the House. They did it with the Reaper guy. Visually looked really cool, which is the boss for this chapter, the Haunted Train Yard chapter.
I think that stuff like that just adds in a lot of that like Final Fantasy charm, I guess. You know, is as realistic as they look, I don't want the series to ever lose that bit of wackiness or that bit of humor that they inject throughout. And so I think this one actually captures the essence of the series pretty well, despite how serious and how super realistic it looks. And the house is pretty evident of all that.
Yeah. All I could think during the train yard sequence after the graveyard was, this little ghost boy is the reason why Sector 7 was destroyed. Because if he didn't waste our time, we could have saved the day. That's all I thought about. Like, and that's why I found it weird that it was a filler chapter. Like, we're supposed to be rushing, but we're like having this weird kind of lovely time with the ghost boy.
All right, not now, Aerith, please. There's going to be a whole lot more ghosts if we don't hurry.
It's true. And then there are.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
It does imply that more people were saved, though. It does imply that they knew something was wrong and a lot of people did evacuate.
Yeah. Well, I like that we get to, I mean, I guess that moves on to the next chapter, but I like to see that, you know, we play as Aerith for a little while and she helps people evacuate and, what's his name? Wedge survives somehow. Because he's gone with the other two right away, right?
In the original, you find him like by the gate to Sector 7 and 6, like right by the park. And it's not clear if he's alive or not. Like, it's very ambiguous in the original. But this does imply that the fate has been changed because he gets... Well, no, he doesn't get out. He gets out and comes back in and saves some cats.
Yeah, he got to save those cats. Got to save those cats. But I really liked that. I liked it. It shows like, okay, we're actually going to save as many people as we can here. We're going to get everybody out. You get to play as Aerith, which was fun. Or not fun, but it was like a harrowing experience trying to get to Seventh Heaven and find Marlene and do all that stuff. Can we
talk about why Aerith walked so fucking slow the whole time?
Dude, she's never been there before, you know? She just won't get lost.
she didn't have a GPS on her.
She never GPS on.
Oh my god, dude, it was infuriating.
She didn't have the GPS material.
You got to be nice to the little kid and like not scare the little kid that's already terrified. But man, like, there's fucking like metal falling from the sky. Aerith. Yeah, walk a little bit faster.
She's been on her feet all day, bro. Cut her some slack. Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Actually, we skipped over this part, but the part where you are wandering between the sectors and you have to do the crane arm bit through like the ruins of Sector 6. I hated that so much. I liked the bandits that you fought. Those guys were funny, but I hated that section
so
much.
Yeah, and I love that they showed up a couple more times throughout the game.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she's moving slow here too. And while you're doing all that, they're kind of slowing it down with her, making you take in the situation a little bit more. Then we're cutting back to Cloud and Tifa like storming the castle here, going up the tower, and holy shit, yeah.
And this is a fight for survival, Chapter 12. And I got the question here, who cried? Who cried? Admit it. We're big boys, we can admit it.
I think I was definitely tearing up. I've played a lot of Final Fantasy in the last couple weeks, and I've teared up a lot. These games really do it for me.
I definitely teared up, like, especially like when Jessie did her big sacrifice, like, because Jessie's fucking awesome. Like,
yeah, she's really cool.
It was really sad to see. And this is jumping forward a little bit, but so ending shows that Biggs is still alive.
Yeah.
And
or is he?
We're pretty sure Wedge is still alive, like, but we don't get anything on Jessie. Like,
I guess
Jessie
sucks, man.
I assume that that's confirmed dead for us then.
My hands are in the air. I have a statement to say.
Next to a prepared
statement.
Next to Biggs is Jessie's headband and fist, like gloves.
Okay, I wasn't sure if those were his or hers, because my first thought was that's Jesse's, but he also wears a red headband, right?
Yes, they both wear headbands. Hers is slightly on the pinker side of the red. And his gloves are just leather gloves, like fingerless leather gloves, I believe, whereas hers has a metal piece on the back.
Okay.
But...
There could be hope.
Is that
but,
just...
But those are also just like...
Mementos, because they found her body.
Yeah, it could just be mementos of her, right? Yeah.
So
see, that's one of my questions at the end. As a filthy scrub, I was trying to go, how does the body count in this react to the original? and who have we got that's still going, and who have we got that's dead?
In the original,
well, I think in the original, all three of them died, right?
Well, yeah. But Wedge is the only one that's like, you.
I guess Wedge is
Wedge is a question mark, but yeah. Otherwise they either die or are never in the game again.
Yes. Yeah. So and well, the question is Biggs alive, or is that an alternative timeline? Then yeah. He did survive.
Could be an alternate timeline.
Anyway, we're jumping the shark now. So yeah, it's
you fight your way up. You fight Rude and Reno, right?
It's sad.
Yeah, it's sad. This part is rough. It's you know, them sort of not seeing the consequences of their actions, because I like that the characters both feel responsible, but at the same time are like, no, this isn't our fault. This is Shinra's fault. We're not the ones doing this. Shinra is doing this. We can't keep making ourselves feel bad about the things that they are doing. We just have to keep fighting them. And I like that they're kind of like, you know, drawing that line in the sand.
The biggest tragedy for me with Jesse is that she blames herself for the deaths caused for the Sector 8 thing, where it was actually Shinra.
She has no idea.
I wanted her to find out that it was Shinra's doing. Like, that she didn't die feeling guilty for what she did by mistake, as far as she thought. And that was the biggest tragedy for me, for her, is that she felt that she had done wrong when she hadn't.
And on top of all this terrible stuff happening, the Turks finally catch up to Aerith in Seventh Heaven, and she's able to like get Marlene to safety, which we're all happy about. But unfortunately, now she's being taken, and we're gonna have to go save her.
Yeah, she kind of like makes a deal with Sung, or however you pronounce his name.
I think that's it. Yeah,
to get Marlene to safety in exchange for. Like
her
giving herself
along.
Up,
yeah.
Which is
because her cooperation is worth enough to them that they're like, yeah, fine, sure, we'll go help the girl. So they just drop her off at her mom's house.
So then that's pretty much our motivation for the rest of the game is getting Aerith back.
Yeah. First, we got to swing by Aerith's mom's house so we can learn about ancients, though.
Yeah.
that's the thing.
Get some cool exposition from Aerith's mom.
Yeah.
Like, was that how you learned about ancients in the original game too?
I don't know.
It might have been later on in the game now, think about it, the flashbacks. But and it might have been Aerith telling Cloud at some point. But there is that flashback, I'm pretty sure, of the mum and daughter at the train station.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, like the Turks, like everyone likes the Turks. Like they're kind of your good villains or bad good guys. They're kind of a weird kind of mix.
Yeah. Sort of anti-hero-ish.
Yeah.
But boy, does it make them seem like this. They're doing the same thing they did in the original. But boy, does it seem a whole lot worse now. It's like,
Yeah.
I know it's your job.
Because they're not just.
You just murdered a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, Reno and Rude show that they're conflicted, but it's like, guys. Come on, this is pretty fucked up.
Yeah, and I've always said I never really thought about it in the original as well, but now I did. What have they done with the people who on top of the plate? Did they evacuate them because they were the, or did they get sacrificed?
No,
as well?
Those people died too. Like that was the whole thing.
They're all
right?
Dead.
Yeah, see, that's epic, man. So that means Jesse's parents are dead because they were on top of Sector 7, weren't they?
Oh yep. God. Oh.
Yep. So Jesse and her parents dead.
Oh no.
That's sad. Why would you say that, Charles?
Convenient, but dead.
Her pizza's dead.
No!
Yeah, rip Jesse's mom's pizza.
God. And all you get
slice.
As a consolation prize is finding out that there's this ancient...
Pretty safe people.
Yeah. We find out that there's this ancient angel race that lives on this planet, and Aerith is the last of them or something, and that Shinra wants to find the Promised Land, which is full of Mako energy, and we get a lot of exposition and stuff, and then you hug a crying girl, or... talk to your bro Barrett or whatever it is that happens when we talk to Aerith.
the Aerith thing is, like I said, that's where you get the whole whatever happens, you can't fall in love with me thing. It's tough. That was a hard scene for me to watch.
I'm okay with that.
Feels like this is the point where the game's kind of like, right, you've had your fun, let's load in the real reason why we're here, kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, right, that's it. Fun's over. You fought Murder House's enough. Time to take on some real bad guys.
Wait, yeah. So do you talk to Aerith here, or is that like a flashback?
No, you do talk to her, but it's like a projection.
It's a vision.
Interesting.
Force projection.
Or a vision, whatever.
Star Wars. Yeah,
Obi-Wan Kenobi style.
She's using Force time.
Cool.
She did
cool.
Luke Skywalker. She wasn't really there, but she still fought the battle.
But she still fought Kylo Ren, yeah, and won.
That's right. Get fucked, Kylo Ren.
I don't know. Cloud has way too many flashbacks for my liking. It's like every 6 seconds.
He's having flashbacks and flash forwards because they show some of the iconic scene from the original with Aerith and, you know, the Holy Materia, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And that's
also,
when
him looks identical to him yeah, just in a smaller body. That annoyed me. It's like, they're children supposed to be. They're meant to look different. No, have the same bloody hairstyle with braids.
He had a ponytail. All right, it was a little different.
and his voice was, like, more teeny.
Yeah.
Oh, forgot. But this visually, it's the same person. He's only grew 2 feet.
He's got a bit more muscle.
You could have did, like, a Captain America thing where they had him as a wee runty guy.
Wait.
But no, they just had him like, oh, yeah.
We skipped over the fact that we went and found Wedge in the broken world where we played as Barrett,
and that was fun.
Didn't happen. We actually save him and he appears later in the game, which didn't happen in the original. But yeah, you get to play as Barrett and shoot a lot of things. Shooting, like, the boxes was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I just hammering on that square. Like, boy,
It was good stuff. They really appreciate Barrett's playstyle.
Yeah, something about the way that Barrett just screams at everything, too, yeah, just really upset. Like,
Barrett was enjoying it, too. He was having a good riot of a time.
Yeah.
See, all you got to do is shoot things.
And that's where you find, like, the underground lab, right, where...
That's mentioned earlier, yeah.
Wedge fell into or whatever, so then you get to come back to that later for a really cool boss fight that we'll talk about in a little bit.
Yeah, that was fun stuff. So what is that? Does that lead us to the day Midgar stood still?
Oh, I guess that would have been right now, right? This is still where you would have fought.
And Search of Hope is the side missions where you continue the Angel of the Slums. Oh, we see Cat Sith in that cutscene.
Oh.
Oh yeah, and he presses F to pay respects.
I didn't even realize that was him until later.
Oh really?
Yeah. I forgot what his name was, like Reeve. That's Reeve, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I just, or even if it's not, whatever. I mixed up who he was, and I was just like, yeah, okay. And then later on, you see plushy version of him. I was like, okay, sure. I know what that is, but you might not. This is an odd choice. And now I'm realizing he was in the game for like half of it.
Yeah, you see the little cat guy with the crown, like, just watching.
And he, like, punches the ground.
Yeah. And I thought they'd bring him into the game, but they didn't anymore, which is weird. And
I mean, he will be in the next part.
Oh,
I'm
sure. Yeah. Because that's the thing, cat, he's like a cat riding a big robot that's controlled by a guy at Shinra headquarters.
So strange.
Well, because, like you know, Reeve's whole thing is that, like, he's not super into what Shinra is doing, right? Mm-hmm. So he's sort of fighting for the other side secretly by using Cat Sith.
Yeah.
But yeah, did you guys do the Behemoth boss fight?
Yes.
That was probably my favorite fight in the entire game. Had big Monster Hunter energy. I really enjoyed, like, figuring out how to fight that and, like, breaking its horn and its tail and its hindquarters or whatever, its upper body, lower body. That was really super, super fun.
Really enjoyed those kind of fights, and this one in particular.
Yeah, I would have done a whole game of Behemoth style fights.
There's another a smaller enemy, I think it's a Hellhound, that had, like, purple and red fire. And to get it pressured so you could do stagger damage, you had to cure it, which I thought, and cast ice.
Yeah,
you
had to cast cure or ice.
But you had to do both, and then once it was done both, it was just, like, it was basically staggered, and you could just do heaps of damage. I just thought it was really cool. I love little mechanics like that. And the cool thing is you do cure, which is easy to hit because it's instant hit, and ice sucks because it doesn't move with the enemy. you can then cast it because he's still. Like, I just like those strategies where you can work it out and makes the fight a lot easier. Cool stuff.
Agreed. Yeah. So then we move on to climbing up the wall.
Although, how much would you have preferred to be able to ride chocobos down those corridors rather than fast traveling?
Yeah, this is climbing is slow, but are we talking about the part where like they're climbing the ruins outside, yep, like at sunset? Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty linear section, but visually, I really loved it. I like any sunset setting in a video game, so I'm a sucker for that stuff. But this, I think, kind of lets you as the player and the characters themselves sort of take in the scale of everything that has happened.
Yeah, yeah. It's really cool, and also I think there's a bench with the save points, quote unquote, if you don't know, are like these benches with vending machines next to them. Where you can rest to heal up and buy stuff from the vending machines. And a lot of the vending machines will be playing music, and you can buy a disc of that music that you can then play at other like jukeboxes throughout the game or whatever. And there's a bench with a vending machine like about halfway up, they're climbing up this destroyed wall. And the music that is playing is something titled something along the lines of like Hidden in the Shadows.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought that music and then stepped around the corner to where some enemies were hiding in the shadows, and I thought that was extremely funny.
Well, at this point as well, the benches change from like being the branding of the vending machines to having the save point logo from the original game, which I thought was kind of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you also notice that like when you get up to like the top of the, like when you're up on the plate, like the benches are like really nice and the vending machines have touch screens and stuff.
Yeah, they're up on the they're up in the rich section.
You're up in the fucking stratified air, man.
Yeah. So you get up there, you fight some battles, you take a look at the destruction, and
You fight that big ass robot that was a huge pain in the ass.
Yeah, because
when it staggers, you can't get close because it has a barrier that pushes you away. That was infuriating.
Yep, it's very annoying.
And then Barrett had his stupid punchy gun instead of his shooty gun, so he wasn't any help.
Oh, no.
I used that.
One nice thing that we haven't really talked about, like in the boss fights especially, is that a thing I really liked is that you could go into a boss fight, size up what you're up against, and then immediately just go into your menu and quit out to right before the boss fight.
Yeah, I think that was a good...
it would let you just reload to right before the boss fight.
Yeah, it's very...
So that then you could equip yourself for the boss.
Yeah, it's very gamer-friendly having that. Like, if you die, it's not going back to checkpoints, like, way back.
The only time that I felt frustrated by a death was in one of the final battles. You know, there's multiple phases of that. I was fighting maybe the third phase of that final boss, and I died, and it's my own fault because I was playing on my lunch break, and I was really rushing through, and I'd spent about 30 minutes, 40 minutes maybe, getting to that point, watching all the cutscenes, all that stuff, and then I died, and I was like, oh, no big deal, I'm just gonna restart from like right where I was, like you have throughout this entire game, except nope, this is the one part where it puts you 40 minutes back. Yep. I was like, oh,
same thing happened to me. It's because it's all one continuous fight. Like the menu, you can't go into the menus at any point, and you keep the same limit gauge.
And you can't skip cutscenes because they're not cutscenes. It's gameplay where you're running between the sections.
Yep. Yeah, I wasn't a heavy camper without that.
Yeah. But first, we got to go through the Shinra building. Important question I have for you folks. Did you take the stairs or the elevator?
I took the stairs.
Oh, stairs, man. Stuart took
the stairs.
Stuart took the elevator, didn't you?
No, I took stairs.
Yeah, I mean, like, there was no way I wasn't taking the stairs.
Yeah, it's so funny, because at first I just thought, I'm going to keep running. And then Barrett passed me at one point, and I went, wait, what?
Yep.
What is... And I realized I was slowing down. I was like, holy shit, no way.
One of my favorite things is, like, when you get to, like, around level 54 or so, Barrett just goes, I want to go back.
Yeah.
It's like, you're almost there, dog.
One of the best things about this game is the banter between the characters. Like, it is scripted and voice acted so well that
that's something we haven't really talked about. I really enjoyed all the performances, new voice actors for all the characters, and I really like everybody.
I've seen some people that like complaining that they don't like the Cloud as much as like the Cloud from Advent Children and Crisis Core, but like I think he fits really well. I love him.
Yeah,
very much.
It's good.
It's not like a Batman Noctis that they had at first in Final Fantasy 15. Also, the Squall that they have for all of, like, you know, Dissidia and World of Final Fantasy. He's a 17-year-old boy with emotional problems, but he talks like this in all right. of these other games. I'm like, whoa, Squall, dude, whoa. I think you're cool, but are you this cool?
Yeah. But Tifa came
But yeah, so like... all that stuff is super fun. And man, this whole time going up into this building, we're seeing flashes of, you know, what Shinra's up to the whole time, which is kind of building the tension because they know that you're there, but the characters don't know that they know, you know?
Yeah.
Like there's that, you know, dramatic tension, I guess, or dramatic irony as they're getting further and further up there. And I love that there's the character whose name I forget who walks right by the Sephiroth, essentially. Like, he's
Palmer.
Walking down the hall.
Palmer
yeah.
is that character.
And he goes in and he freaks out and he tells everybody that he saw Sephiroth. And they're like, yeah, dude, sure you did. Okay. but this whole time, honestly, I don't want to skip too far ahead through the section, but I was waiting for that iconic scene of going into the president's office and seeing Sephiroth's sword sticking out of the man's body.
Yeah.
So even though I was still excited by what happened up there, I was disappointed that we didn't get that iconic scene.
Yep.
It's like the scene in Metal Gear, you know, when you go down the corridor and Gray Fox has just torn everybody apart and there's just bodies everywhere and you have no idea what's going on. It gave off similar vibes to that, because you walk in and the music has changed and there's just this huge sword sticking out of a man's corpse. And you go, holy shit, the president of Shinra is fucking dead.
Yeah, which happens in the end, but yeah, that's delayed with them hanging off the side of the building.
Yeah. Which, we, you know, gave us some character growth, gave us more moments to really flesh out Barrett, I think, which is always nice to get a little bit more from him, his motivations and where he draws the line, like that moment of him pulling the president back up and like, that's just not the kind of man that Barrett is. He's not just going to let somebody fall to their death. So I liked the section a lot.
Yeah, man, the fucking propaganda, like the when you go through the museum.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was awesome.
On point. Like, that was incredible. Like,
really great looking cutscenes. It's hardcore propaganda.
Yeah.
And it was fun, like, learning more about some of these characters and figures that are mentioned in the original game that you just don't get flavor from. Like, because you, like, mm-hmm. their holo recordings are hilarious. Like, Hojo's is like, why am I doing this? It's a waste of my time.
Oh yeah, we shouldn't skip over the Hojo section because it's intense.
but before we get there, speaking of the museum, I don't know if y'all have seen this. I actually had it pointed out to me by a friend who had heard about it online and asked me about it. There is in President Shinra's museum or whatever, like the first floor of it, when you're seeing like all the different mementos from his life or whatever, there's like a photo with a whole bunch of people in it, and front and center in that photo is someone wearing a mask that looks exactly like Shinra from Final Fantasy X-2's mask.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I assume it's just an Easter egg. I don't think they're trying to like be like, oh, these games are connected, but
there is that theory, and I don't know if they've commented on it, but there's that character Shinra from the Final Fantasy X games, who is searching to like develop a sort of like life sustaining technology kind of thing. I mean, his name is Shinra, and it alludes to what Shinra in Final Fantasy VII does. So we don't know if it's on the same world or anything like that. I mean, the world of Final Fantasy X is mostly water, and it's called Spira. So you know, either way, that's a cool Easter egg.
Titus is an ancient.
For sure.
yeah, he might as well be.
Yeah, the Hojo section is nuts, and he's nuts. Like, I think he's voice acted quite well, and his character, it came to life. Like, his mental...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was great. Like, really, really, really good. Like, fuck, I hate this guy, I gotta get to him and kill him.
Mm-hmm. Do you know who...
He has Red 13 down there, and...
Do you know who he reminded me of? The actor, like the... I can't remember his name, but he plays Green Goblin in Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire.
Oh, Willem Dafoe.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
It looks like him.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
And he's going to now sue them for stealing his likeness.
Yeah. He and Hojo down here. So obviously we meet Red 13. We save Aerith. All the good stuff. We see all of his crazy experiments. And we see what looks to be Genova. Hojo also almost tells Cloud some big spoilery backstory stuff. But he stopped the whispers show up.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, which I was really surprised when he started talking, like, boy, are they really going to fucking do this here?
Yeah, because that's like a late game thing from the original where we learn all this backstory stuff. But so I'm sort of glad that they teased it and then pulled back, because obviously, you know, longtime fans are going to go, oh, I know what that is. But otherwise, it's just sort of building this weird mystery. And, it, you know, it leans into the headaches that Clouds gets and these visions and blah, blah, blah.
Charles, you have in the notes, best line in the game. Would you like to reveal what you believe the best line in the game is?
It's just after all this, after they're trying to escape, and we've got Aerith, Red 13, and Barrett, and they get down to the lobby of the Shinra building, and they're confronted by the general and a whole bunch of soldiers. And he's like, who have we got here? And Barrett's like, Avalanche! And then Aerith's like, local florist.
Oh, yeah.
And then,
that's very good.
And then Red 13's like, lab rat dog.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was just, I think it's what Barrett called him, like when they're asking, when they after Cloud passes out.
Yeah, because Red's like, I'm not a rat or something like that. Well,
he also gives like some serious shade when they're driving away in the truck, and Barrett's like, this piece of shit, and he's like, you know, whatever. And Red 13 says something back to Barrett along the lines of like, oh yeah, it's, you know, running so slow because of the 300-pound sack of shit in the back. That's referring to Barrett. I was like, holy. I mean, he delivers it very well, better than I just did, but I was like, damn, dude, Nanaki, you got some shit.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like Red 13. He's my favorite side character in the games. Like, he was always one of my mains. I've always liked Red
13. Yeah, he's a lot of fun. I know a lot of people are probably disappointed that you couldn't play as him directly, but I was actually happy with the way that they included him as a support party member, because that late in the game, I didn't want to have to mess with anybody else's stats or equipment or materia or anything. I was happy to have him be support.
Do you think he'll be a playable character?
He better be.
That's a good question.
He better be.
I think he will be.
Because I certainly thought so, like all of the missing characters in Red 13 will be playable. But now I'm wondering if they will do certain characters that will just be support. But I think that would just make people angry. So yeah, he'll probably be playable.
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if like Red 13 and like K-Sith are just support characters, right?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe because their physics it would be so much different than the other characters.
Yeah, it would be a bummer though. It would definitely be a bummer.
You cannot make Vincent or Yuffie into a support character, even though they're optional in the original game, just because people really love those characters.
Yeah.
Vincent, Red 13, and Cloud.
Can you imagine the internet rage if fucking Vincent wasn't available as a character?
Oh, I know. People lose their minds.
But he was a very good character in this, and he looked cool. But just the way it's like, so what are you? And he's like, suffice that I am me, kind of real philosophical kind of answer.
He's very wise.
And then when he's confronted with a question, he's like, I'm a lab rat dog. I just thought it was so good. It was good times.
I found these different bosses to be pretty fun. The Aerith Barrett boss fight. I was fighting this thing at like 11:30 at night, trying to beat the game before I went to sleep. but I was actually I was urgently playing, but I really enjoyed that boss fight. I liked the stuff you do with Cloud and Tifa. And then having Cloud come down on the motorcycle and just be absolutely absurd and anime, ridiculous.
Oh my god, it was so good.
I loved it so much.
Yeah, the flinging the sword into the glass window, like past the Sinra shoulder's head, was phenomenal.
Yeah.
We should like talk a little bit about like the, because we get the Rufus boss fight.
I hated that fight.
Oh yeah,
I hated that fight.
I thought that fight was super fun.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have
trouble with it, but like, you know, a lot of people did. Like I was saying, my best friend was texting
figuring
me
out like how to like get the dog off the leash, basically.
Was a
super cool like evolution of the duels that you've been doing throughout the game.
I just a little coin trick, just visually. It doesn't make any goddamn sense, but it was fun.
Yeah.
Just like it looked cool, and it just all their attacks knocked you out of all your moves. And I just like every single one of them, whereas most enemies had your standard attacks, which is the damage, and only a few of their attacks would break you out of your abilities, whereas every single attack they did blocked you out. And I just found I was just waiting in the corner for the dog to get close so I could hit it, and then it was just like a slow, boring fight. Maybe I didn't get the mechanics of it right, but it just was not fun.
I waited till he did his reload animation. I would dodge around. He would do his reload. As soon as he would reload, I'd hit him. That would stagger him. And then when I, or not stagger him, but it would kind of like his animation, he would stagger a little bit. And then I would use Braver on him because it's quick enough to get it off. And then that would stagger Rufus. And I don't really remember what I did with the dog, but that was my, my strategy for.
Well, and specifically like it hints that, there's a certain attack that you can do to him that will stagger him every time. Mm-hmm. And that is Braver, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Every time he did the reload, if you do Braver, then it staggers him every single time.
When it was just him, me and him, it was fine. It was just with the dog. It just was it didn't seem normal. Like, I don't know how to break the leash.
I definitely died to them a few times. Like, that dog is a real fucker. Well, but once you get rid of the dog, like, the boss fight is pretty easy.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I did it on my second time, but it didn't feel like a proper fight. Like, I felt like I was kind of just avoiding the fight and slowly chipping away. Like, I survived.
Sure.
But it wasn't entertaining. It didn't feel satisfying. Like, it was quite a letdown for that specific fight.
Yeah.
And it made no sense that Tifa's like, right there, why don't she just come and fight with you? Like,
she's got to hold the door open or something. I don't know what she was doing.
big questions.
So you escape. You do a motorcycle chase. I see in the notes that you were not very pleased with this. I died on this, and this is when I was trying to beat it that night at midnight, and I died, and I was like, fuck, man.
Yeah, dying to the boss robot at the end was really fucking frustrating.
Yeah,
before I figured out like how to dodge the explosions and stuff properly.
Mm-hmm.
At least it refills your health, though.
Yeah.
Red heals you.
Yeah,
but once you get through that, I was like, all right, this is the end of the game. That's fun, cool, whatever. Yep.
But then it wasn't the end of the game.
And then it wasn't the end of the game, and you have like an hour's worth of boss fights left.
To be honest,
yeah, because I think when I was at this part, like I literally like had beaten the robot and gotten to the last bench before the ending of the game, and then had to go do a raid in Destiny, and I was so fucking mad. I was like, we have to get through this as fast as possible because I have to go finish this game.
Yeah. This is where the game gets weird. Like, for real. Weird.
Yeah.
This is probably where the biggest changes are to be found.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And the
technically, this is new manufactured.
None of this is in the original game.
Yeah, in the original, you just get to the end of the highway. They escape Midgar. It's like, all right, we got to get out of the city. We'll go off on our adventure. We're going to go do the thing. It basically, like, if you cut out all of the final battle stuff and just a highway to it, final cutscene, that's basically the same.
Yeah.
But
except for the
having
stuff. But
so, all right. So here they decide this is the what is the name of the chapter?
Destiny's Crossroads.
Aerith seems to be keyed into something a little bit here, and Sephiroth keeps showing up. So now it's time to have the showdown. What the hell? This is the meat and potatoes. 3 hours into the podcast, this is the meat and potatoes.
Sorry, Chris.
That's okay.
I spent way too long talking about The Last of Us 2 late. My fault.
No, but I mean, that's what this game does. We're talking about it for 2 hours. It happens to the best of us. we fight some crazy bosses. I don't even know where to begin with this.
So you basically make the decision that you're going to defy fate.
Mm-hmm.
You and Aerith like kind of pulls you back initially. She's like, are you really sure you want to do this? Because this is where she's like, seems like she knows some things. And maybe like, you know, like even going as far back as like the, no matter what, you can't fall in love with me. Kind of implying that she knows that she's destined to die. Right.
Yeah.
So she kind
of
pulls
Cloud
back
has seen like, visions of that throughout the game.
Yep.
Yeah.
So she kind of pulls you back and is like, are you really sure you want to do this? And like, Cloud's like, I have to, like, at this point it's like, I have to face Sephiroth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's kind of been his driving motivation for the entire game, really.
And one thing we haven't really mentioned is during the siege on Shinra and their escape, the wisps are very present. We didn't mention it. Wedge kind of comes in as heroically to provide an escape for your crew. He pulls in at Avalanche and providing an out, which fails, and that's why you exit through the way the original game did. And this is where Wedge is trying to still keep helping with the fight, but then gets drawn back. And that's why I think he dies, is because there is a sound. He's getting fighting the wisps, and he gets thrown back, and it goes black. And then it sounds like he falls.
Oh, yeah.
So he, I believe that, well, that's what I think. They, Destiny was changed by keeping him alive. And he had to die. And so the wisps caught up with him, is what I read it as.
Final Fantasy's version, the Final Destination.
Well, yeah, basically. And that's why now they have to full on fight the source of these whispers and take them down, because otherwise they're going to keep Destiny on track. So if they want to change things, which none of them know what they're doing, really.
No.
They just feel like this is something they should do, and they're not going to back down from it. So they
I
step
honestly
into
kind
that
of feel
light.
Like Sephiroth kind of gaslit Cloud into thinking that this is what he needed to do too.
Mm-hmm. So I don't want to spoil another series or anything like that, but this the Dark Tower has a lot of dimensions, a lot of timelines, a lot of worlds and stuff like that. The series of books by Stephen King. And Sephiroth in Final Fantasy VII Remake reminds me of the main character of the Dark Tower. He's the person trying to do the timeline until he gets it right, essentially. And for Sephiroth, that's... I don't know if this is the Sephiroth from the original who has come to another world to try and do this again, or if this is this universe's Sephiroth who has somehow been made aware of his failed attempt in another timeline or something like that and is trying to get it right. But... as we said, this is Sephiroth. It's called Final Fantasy VII Remake because Sephiroth is trying to remake the events of Final Fantasy VII so that it turns out in his favor.
So then perhaps the future games can be will be other renames.
Yeah,
which is
the
thing that I'm big on now.
Rebirth, reunion.
I was going to say Rebirth's likely going to be the second one.
Yeah, and then reunion makes a lot of sense for the third one.
Yeah,
she ain't dying anytime soon, I don't think.
Right.
I think that's going to be the biggest twist to walk away
I think so
in
too.
This is Aerith. Well, I know obviously it's legendary, but I don't think Aerith will die. And that
I think she will die, but you'll be able to bring her back. You'll put in that code finally.
Interesting. Interesting. There's all these rumors now about how
you know the toy soldiers.
Oh, what if or not? not.
See the thing is if Sephiroth is a dimension jumper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Why have the Whispers not attacked him? Because obviously the Whispers are the Dimension Police. Time cops.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing.
They say something about like how like they ignore him for some reason or another, but I don't remember what it was.
Well, they seem to be working in his favor.
That's the thing, because technically...
It's hard to figure out his motives. I think that's...
I mean,
that's
I don't know that I would say they were working in his favor, because I feel like he doesn't want...
But then I suppose this is us back to what I was saying at the beginning. They're a neutral entity unless you do something that is not towards what they demand. Then things go sideways, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
So if he's just sitting there playing, reading the script,
yeah, until it gets to the point where he needs to change something, right? Like,
yeah,
right.
And then it's like, right, fair enough, you're the target. But until that point, do you know what I mean? Because the bit where he floats, I didn't know that earlier on, that's just weird.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, by the way, I can also fly. So, huh?
Well, that's the thing. When I mean,
Cloud can also fly, so.
When I was going through this final sequence, and it's very Kingdom Hearts, it's very timey-wimey, spacey-wacey. Like, it's real, like, things are all broken apart. You're not in the real world, is what I'm guessing. It seems like you've gone into this Destiny realm where...
Yeah,
because all of Midgard gets blown up basically, and you're using it as a Mario platform to jump around on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, like this is like again, like it's Destiny's Crossroads, right? Like you are at the intersection of timelines of dimensions, right?
Yeah. See, I
and that's insofar as like getting to the after you finally finish the game and like you get this ending cutscene, like you see that whole thing with Aerith and Zack, like. Crossing paths and like very clearly like they both recognize that there's someone else there but there isn't someone there, right? So that's like a whole like, oh, this is they're sensing things on the same in the same place in different dimensions or timelines, right?
Yeah. See, when I was playing through it, I was thinking, okay, they've made this ending so they don't have to do any more, because we see clips of Aerith dying. The final fight is a mirror image of the Sephiroth fight. in the original, like the final fight. Like, they basically condensed everything, and they're like, well, we can stop this now. We can stop the whole adventure, like, the whole story continuing if we just take care of Sephiroth now. That's what it felt like they were doing. And so, but then the final scene, the cutscene is like, oh yeah, we've got to chase Sephiroth. And so it felt like they were like writing it to be like, we don't actually have to do the whole story. We're just going to keep it to this. But then they're like, oh, no, we're going to still. And it felt...
Well, I don't know. That just all reads as meta commentary to me.
Yeah.
On like, this is, you know, us giving ourselves the right to change Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
But do you think, well, we've just mentioned it again, I think it would have been better if the Sephiroth fight didn't happen.
Same. I think I'd prefer...
I think if you once you hammer the wisp monster dragon thing, he says a couple of lines, and then he goes, chase me, and then he disappears into his portal.
Yeah, I could see.
Whereas, I think having to fight him is just basically, right... Fanboys,
yeah.
Quick Sephiroth.
It's fan service. It's that whole fight was fan service. They could have got their point across.
It's a kind of feel safe that if they never make the next one, and everybody else is too old or dead, take a pick. they can at least have closure a little bit.
Well, that's what it felt like during the actual end sequence. Is that they're doing this so if they can't work out how to, or they don't, then this is a nice box tied up with its own with its own bow. Like, it could be a standalone.
But then as well, it's also... I can't remember what it is, but there's also a series out there that... as we spoke about the kind of tertiary expanded universe stuff, I could imagine, like, the next bit being a film. Like, to fill in the holes between whatever we are and to wherever we go. Do you know what I mean? A new CGI movie.
Right.
Or something. And I can see that being a kind of logic they'd take. Because Kingdom Hearts have done that, haven't they?
That's why
certain things that were like CGI movies, weren't they? Two or three of them.
Well, that's what I really don't want to happen. Like, I don't want to go to Kingdom Hearts because that's what it's feeling like it's leaning towards. Getting too weird and not being able to track and follow.
I suppose they're putting on all the elements of what they've done to date into it. This is the thing. It's a different square from what it was back then when it was a cube. It's become a square. And I think it's like they're pulling on their knowledge, everything they've worked on, and they know, well, they know what works, they know what doesn't work. That's open to deliberation. But they know kind of how to make a good JRPG, I think, at this stage in the game, you know? And they know what the fan base want, and they know what the fan base don't want.
We hope so.
And they don't care.
Well, that's like, I enjoyed this ending and it was fine and I enjoyed the game. It's when I started thinking about it and thinking about all the potentials of timelines, I get worried and like, and I'm like, it's a little too nuts.
The thing that backs up the video idea is that Kingsglaive was a DVD win it for 15.
Yeah.
So
I want to be.
And they had like Sean Bean on it, you know. So they've brought in like, come on, they've brought in talent.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see some stuff like that. Maybe with this whole Zack thing at the end. So I mean, the cast, they fight Destiny, they fight Sephiroth. They're left to pursue him and try to stop him from completing his nefarious plans, and we are left with a few big question marks. I think that the game hopefully won't get too dimensional and crazy. I mean, I'm fine with some playing around of that stuff like they have so far. Don't want it to get too complicated. But they can now pursue in a different way, right? This gives them license to change anything that they want going forward because the timeline is different. Destiny's defeated. It's all an open door now. Who knows what's going to happen? But we get the Zack stuff. Now, the Zack stuff is interesting because it's the same scene of his quote-unquote death from Crisis Core, right?
Yep.
Except this time he clearly has not died. Somehow Zack has survived, which is would make a huge change on Cloud and Aerith and everybody else. We know that this is like a different dimension because Midgar looks different the way that Zack sees it. And also...
So we put the reactor and stuff in it. If that stuff didn't exist.
And the dog stamp, the... Avalanche like logo thing that they use or whatever. That looks different. It's a different breed of dog when Zach sees it.
Oh, that should be bigger.
So
it's got a different heart.
Right. It's potentially a different dimension or different timeline or whatever. So that's the one big question mark is what the hell is going on with Zach? Obviously, he's a big character in the extended universe of Final Fantasy VII. The other thing that I've been thinking a lot about is when Sephiroth keeps telling Cloud, you have 7 seconds. What are you going to do with those 7 seconds? I know that the scene where Sephiroth, the iconic scene of Sephiroth jumping down and killing Aerith is, I think, 7 seconds long. Like, just that part of it. I don't know if that's what he was alluding to or if there is a 7 seconds thing that we just don't know about
so
yet.
So the thing is that the descriptor for Chapter 18, there's like a thing where it says that Sephiroth shows Cloud a vision of the world 7 seconds before its demise.
Interesting.
So
interesting.
Yeah, because that's when the meteor shows the meteor coming.
I think it is,
isn't it?
Yes.
Well, see, that's the thing.
Yeah, because apparently meteor shows up during the fight. Also, when he's counting down,
what does?
Mm-hmm.
When he hits 7, meteor shows up.
Yeah.
But the other thing, like the thing that is very very clear to me, and I think is probably like, I think that, you know, we can theorize all day, but Sephiroth is from the original game's timeline or dimension, right?
Hmm.
The Sephiroth that we are fighting, running into throughout this game, is Sephiroth from Final Fantasy VII, 1997.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, that's how it seems.
And is this universe's Sam Beckett? In the next week,
you see, that's from my.
Me take him closer home.
I don't like that. That's the problem. I
okay, I do. I'm very excited about it.
I'm happy with whatever they do as long as they stick the landing, because Final Fantasy XIII was never the best game, but it is what it is. And then the sequels, they start fighting with Destiny, and Lightning becomes a god or something like that, and then they fight Destiny even more in the third game of that trilogy. And I think they're similar
cool game, though.
Similar writers. And as long as they don't go too far into the just absolutely like no ground to stand on craziness side of things, then I'm fine with them messing with things.
Yeah, a little bit of crazy is fine. I was thinking about while we've been chatting, yeah, is that if they do an episode, I'm thinking they might do a prequel with Zach or a side story with Zach now.
Yeah,
Having Roach come in as a playable character for Zach Buddy would make sense now.
Interesting.
See, it would be ideal if there was a side console, like a PSP or something, you know? Because that kind of stuff hits me as that kind of, like, well, that's where Advent Children... No, Crisis Core. One of them. Battle Score. appeared on originally, yep. Didn't it? It's like, I don't know if you'd get a VR title or it of any great depth or width or whatever. But it seems like, I don't know... I don't know if they'll keep... I think they might keep the core idea on the PS4, but then you're like, well, these wee tertiary elements could be elsewhere, you know what I mean, like downloadable titles or something, you know?
That's the problem with Kingdom Hearts, it's got so convoluted and I just don't want it to get like that. I just really don't.
Well, Kingdom Hearts shot itself in the foot and it started appearing on the DS.
Well, that's what I mean, like there's,
and that's a platform change that fractures the lineage, because yeah, at least if you're on a hardware and a, no sorry, if you're with a publisher or a firm, you stay there, you can kind of at least keep the same ecosphere, whereas when you break that rule and you end up on the DS, things start kind of bleeding into time and space.
Well, that's
exactly
what,
hopefully Square Enix have learned their lesson and won't fracture you know, the series too much, but
do you think, just to be devil's advocate, do you think we'll see Part 2 as a launch title for the PS5?
I hope it's soon.
Because I don't know, I've not heard anything like that about it, but it wouldn't surprise me if they've done the Matrix thing.
I know.
And they've actually made chunks of that. They've mm-hmm. probably got them all sitting there and they're just having to refine certain bits. You know what I mean? Like, they'll have certain episodes, like, I don't know how many episodes it's planned to be, but they might have it sitting there ready to roll, you know?
Yeah. They said late last year, maybe it was October, November, somewhere around there, that they had already begun work on Part 2. And this game has sold extremely well, so there's certainly incentive
good
for them
time in
to.
That, but as well, but that was the. I know it's what it is, but then the argument is with the world having time to.
Well, it doesn't even include physical sales. Well, not in some countries. There's no physical sales, so it's going to increase as well.
Well, that's the side note. Is a lot of folk there was storylines about how it sold poorly. You know, like, huh? Yeah. So game's probably one of the biggest sales. It annihilated what Resident Evil 3 was probably going to sell, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Which is incredible, because Resident Evil 3 is multi-format, whereas right. this is just a
single platform, sole yeah.
output, you know?
Yeah, it's yeah.
So yeah.
It's a weird
Who
ending.
Knows? I'm excited for the future. I'm very, very excited for whatever they do next. Obviously, they could screw it up, but, I mean, that could be said about anything.
It's true.
Man, just, like, the very last thing you see in the game is the unknown journey will continue. And, yeah. like, how can you not be excited, man?
Oh, no, I am.
Holy shit.
And at the end with you know, with Aerith walking past, Aerith and Cloud walking past, like,
Cloud and Zach.
Cloud and Zach. And the music that theme song starts playing, I was like, I was getting all teared up. I was like, damn, I didn't even know I cared about all this stuff so much. I mean, of course I knew I cared about this
stuff. That theme song gives me fucking chills every time. Yep. It's so good.
Yep. At first I didn't like it. First time I heard it, I didn't like it. But of course it's written by Uematsu. Like, of course I'm going to like it. I fucking love it now.
So that will probably be the ending theme for the episode, I imagine.
Yeah. Yeah.
How far away are we in time frame for when she actually dies in the first game?
Oh, 40 hours of gameplay.
Okay.
It's she dies on disc one, right?
Nah. She does. Yeah, it's like into disc one.
Nah, it's later, isn't it?
I'm pretty sure it's into disc.
Well, disc one, I think she dies near the end of it, and then you start disc two, and that is, you know, a good chunk of the game. But then disc three is just the final dungeon.
Yeah,
toward the end of the game's first disc, villain Sephiroth stabs one of the main characters.
Gameplay length, though, like the discs get shorter and shorter. Like disc two is like half of disc one.
Yeah, that's how they usually are.
I don't know. I feel like I remember disc two being pretty long. It's really just disc three that's short, because disc three is just the end.
It's the end. I mean, and this is how it is for 8 and 9 as well. That final disc is always the final dungeon, all those cutscenes that they stored on the disc, and yep. then, you know, the world map, so you can go anywhere and do anything. But, yeah.
Yeah, but like in like Final Fantasy 8 and 9, like they cut off a lot of the world map in on disc 4.
True.
Yeah.
So the question then is, Die Hard fans, how were you happy to pay another $40? And then another $40, and then another $40,
I'm in.
And something.
Well, I bought it twice already, so yeah, I'm gonna say yes.
I'm all in. I mean, so what were your play times? I was at level 40 and 37 hours when I beat it the first time.
I was like level 40 and 39 hours or something like that.
Level 43 and about 42. And I'm up to almost 70 now on hard mode. Like, combined together. So usually games that I like, I'll go back, I'm like, oh yeah, I want to do all the achievements, and then I start doing them, I'm like, no, I don't actually want to do this, and I go move on, whereas the combat's very satisfying in this, and learning how to min-max it and be more efficient is actually very frustrating, but also very satisfying when you pull through a fight. Like, they are fights, like it's a challenge, and it's I'm actually really enjoying going back through. I'm not watching cutscenes, I'm kind of because it's so fresh in my mind, I don't need to see that again. But yeah, I really like it. I'm really excited for what's to come. It just, the more I talk about, the more I'm kind of worried about potential convolutedness.
I don't know, man. I'm all fucking in. Like, give me the fucking weird dimension hopping Sephiroth. Like, let me hear about his crazy master plan to change the timeline by going into the past and convincing Cloud to kill the Arbiters of Fate. Yeah. Like, man,
convincing
I don't care.
All of Cloud's girlfriends to date Sephiroth instead.
Yep. Just give it all to me. I don't even. I'm all in.
Well, so that's why I think he has control.
I didn't think I was going to be. That's the thing. Is like, I didn't think that I was going to be this into it going into it, but I fucking am, man.
Hell yeah.
Yep.
And here, end of the tale.
We did it.
Sorry, guys. It took ages.
We talked about we talked about Final Fantasy for a long time.
A very long time.
Yeah, I could keep going, guys, but we better stop.
This podcast is going to be like 3.5 hours long. So.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll come back for part two in 6 years.
Yep. let's wrap this bad boy up, yeah, I guess.
Okay, well. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having
Chris,
me on.
Thank you so much for being on. Do you want to talk about your podcasts? You can talk a little bit more about them.
Yeah, sure.
Get a little bit more in depth, and you can promote your Patreon and stuff too if you want.
We do.
Don't cut it. Don't worry.
Yeah, we do it. Me and Jeremy Greer, we do a supernatural podcast called Monster of the Week, where we talk about every episode of that show, and then we spend 40 minutes talking about video games or whatever other garbage comes out of our mouths, because Jeremy saves all of the outtakes. You can find that at monsteroftheweek.cool or on iTunes, all those places. And then we do another podcast, a comedy, sometimes horror podcast called Thinking Face, where we review emojis. And that is... always fun. This, we put out 3 episodes a week for that. So Thinking Face is on iTunes and all that crap too. And then you can find me on Twitter at LocalBones if you want to see me tweet.
Are they 3.5 hours long episodes?
Those are 3 minutes usually.
like 3 to 7 minutes, I would say, for most episodes. Probably closer to 5 in general.
But yeah, I love Final Fantasy. Thanks for letting me talk about it for 3 hours.
Yeah. Also on the subject of Thinking Face, real quick. You may not know this, but I do have a role on that podcast.
That's right.
That we will not reveal on this podcast.
Cross contamination.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, and Chris is too nice to do this, but patreon.com/monsteroftheweek. You can Thanks. Go give money to them and hang out on their good-ass Monster of the Week Discord.
Yeah, you come to our Discord.
I post a lot, so if you want to see me post...
You want to talk about
more than the posts and hours?
It's true. I do post more in the Monster of the Week podcast Discord than I post in the Gamers Guide to the Galaxy one. Stuart, what about you? Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me as always, FuryC3, on the Twitters and under everything under the sun.
Charles,
BetaVanOden.com.
Or out in his back garden with a big bit of wood.
That's more likely, I think. You can find me at Wade Brian R on Twitter. You can find the podcast at Gamers Galaxy Pod or at gamersguidetothegalaxy.space. You can find us on iTunes, wherever fine podcasts are found. If you want to review us or rate us, feel free to do that. 5 stars only. If you give us less than 5 stars, I'm going to delete your review from the internet. And I think that'll wrap us up. So there's only one thing left to say. Don't
forget your gamepad.
Yeah, Charles remembered.
My ATB meteor is filling again.
Quick, take me hold that seat.
I would be lost, drifting alone, floating up high, time after time. All the dreams.